Would I have joined the clergy if it were not for Lady Lufton? I cannot say. The church was never, as I recall, the profession to which I thought I was best suited. What I can say, of course, is that if it were not for Lady Lufton, I would not have become the vicar of Framley. The living of Framley, which is worth £900 a year, was in Lady Lufton's gift, and she thought it right to offer it to me, though I was very young. And I, young as I was, thought it right to accept this offer. I have much reason to be grateful to this patroness of mine. And yet I must confess, I do not altogether enjoy being Lady Lufton's protégé, would rather not be so much in her debt. After a while, one begins to wonder if life outside her ladyship's influence might not have much to recommend it.
Framley Parsonage by Anthony Trollope. Dramatised by Martin Wade.
Mark, the Merediths are to be at Framley on Saturday.
Yes, my dear.
So I promised Lady Lufton that we would go to Framley Court and see them. Stay over for a few days.
Well, Fanny, you can go, and of course you will. But as for me, it's impossible, I'm afraid.
But why?
I'm intending to spend a week at Chaldicotes.
Chaldicotes? For a week?
You mustn't be censorious.
Oh, I hope I'm not that, but Lady Lufton...
She will be censorious.
You know how she doesn't like those Chaldicotes people. She was very annoyed with you the last time you went.
She was, but that, I think, was because I took Lord Lufton with me and she feared for her son's morals. Fanny, I must go. I promised I would. And also, Harold Smith will be there.
Harold Smith?
He's a rising star in the House. Will be in government someday. I cannot afford to neglect his acquaintance.
Can you not?
No, indeed. Also, Dr. Proudie will be present, and Mrs. Proudie.
Oh, well, if the pleasure of meeting Mrs. Proudie is taking you to Chaldicotes, I've nothing more to say.
Fanny, a parish clergyman does well to see his bishop now and then, and the bishop's wife.
I will miss you, Mark, and so will the children. You'll have a word with Lady Lufton, will you, before you go?
Well, I might drop her a note. Or you might speak to her, my dear.
And if I do, what must I tell her?
Why, that I'm going, of course.
Yes, but...
Oh, I have been invited to preach a charity sermon while I'm there, so you could mention that.
She'll be very annoyed, whatever I tell her.
Yes, I suppose she will. But you know, she can't always have her own way.
A charity sermon? At Chaldicotes? You amaze me, my dear.
He is so very sorry about it, Lady Lufton, but it seems he accepted the invitation some while ago.
Well, well. I know that Chaldicotes has many great attractions. Far more than Framley Court can offer.
Oh, it wasn't that. It wasn't that at all.
Was it not, my dear? Was it not, indeed? Oh, I'm being small-minded, perhaps. But I confess that I do like to see your husband in his own parish for most of each week, and in his own church on Sundays. And I also happen to think, Fanny, that he would be far better off with us than with the Chaldicotes set. I really do.
He would undoubtedly be better off here, Lady Lufton. But then, one can't always find oneself in places where one's better off. It just isn't possible.
Not for your husband, at least. It seems that the charms of Mr. Sowerby, and the Harold Smiths, and the Proudies... are proving quite irresistible.
Oh, Lady Lufton, please don't be angry.
I'm not angry. Disappointed, perhaps. But not with you, Fanny. I do not believe your husband has acted properly. But I don't believe that you do either. We've said enough on this matter, I feel. Your husband is not taking you with him to Chaldicotes. And for that reason, if for no other, we shall forgive him. Shall we not, my dear?
The Chaldicotes set, as Lady Lufton calls them, are not quite what a set ought to be according to Lady Lufton's principles. Her ladyship likes people who love their church, their high church, that is, so she has no time for the Proudies. She likes people who love their country and their queen and who are not too anxious to make a noise in the world.
And because Lady Lufton is of this cast of mind, she does not care too much for the Chaldecott set. Will no longer care much for me, perhaps, if she thinks I am inclined to join them. But I am inclined to join them. I'm very much inclined. For life, I think, should offer me a little more than what Framley and Lady Lufton can provide.
Oh, Robarts! My dear Robarts!
Now, this is Mr. Nathaniel Sowerby, the owner of Chaldecott's and Member of Parliament for West Barsetshire.
Welcome again to Chaldecott's. Delighted to see you.
Sowerby, the pleasure is all mine, believe me. Mr. Sowerby and I know each other tolerably well. Better, I admit, than I have given either Lady Lufton or my dear wife to understand.
You're the last to arrive, you know. But now the fun can begin, eh? Oh, by the way, we have an addition to our number.
Indeed.
Miss Dunstable, her name is.
Miss Dunstable.
A rich woman. She's worth 200,000 or thereabouts. Made it all, or rather her father did, from some quack's remedy called Ointment of Lebanon.
Ah, yes.
It was my sister's idea to invite her. Sadly, Miss Dunstable lacks the looks to go with all those thousands. But, well, beggars can't be choosers.
Oh, I see. You're thinking of...
An alliance, yes. Ah, me. You know, there is no man more unfortunate than one who has a large estate but no money. Now, Robarts, there is just time, I think, for you to dress for dinner.
In the wrong place, Mr. Sowerby?
Yes, Miss Dunstable. You should be over here, next to me. And my sister should be next to Mr. Robarts.
Oh, well, I am thoroughly settled now, if Mrs. Smith doesn't mind.
No, not too much. Nathaniel's table manners are tolerable, I think.
So, Mr. Robarts, you are not born and bred in Barsetshire?
No, indeed. I was brought up in Exeter. My father and one of my sisters still live there. But I visited Framley. I am vicar there, you know. I visited Framley quite often in my younger days because I was a friend of Lord Lufton, Lady Lufton's son.
And a friend of his you have remained through thick and thin.
Yes, I like to think so.
Tell me, Mr. Robarts, do you have very much work to do in the parish of Framley?
Much work? Oh, there's plenty of work in every parish if the clergymen choose to do it.
Oh, yes. I suppose that is very much the point, isn't it? If they choose to do it.
Let me tell you, Miss Dunstable.
Yes, Mrs. Proudie.
If a man of the cloth neglects those duties for which he has been called, then he must answer for it. Uh-huh. Is that not so, Bishop?
Yes, most certainly. Yes.
Answer for it before his bishop and before God.
Before God, yes.
I think a vicar's life must be the happiest that a man can lead, do you? And I particularly envy him his weekly climb into the pulpit. I should love to preach a sermon more than anything in the world.
Well, Miss Dunstable, we cannot indulge you this Sunday, I'm afraid. Not at Chaldecott's, at least.
No, yes, Mr. Robarts is preaching a charity sermon, I believe, in aid of the Congolese pygmies.
No, Dr. Proudie. Mr. Robarts' sermon and the lecture that I am giving at the Mechanics Institute at Barchester are both in support of the natives of Borneo, Papua and the Philippines, the Moluccas, Sarawak, the Solomon Islands...
Yes, Harold, and several other islands newly discovered in the vicinity and as yet unnamed. But let us be spared all that for now. Please.
I'm sorry you didn't bring Lord Lufton to Chaldecott's. Where is he all this time?
He was in Scotland when I last heard from him.
I wonder, has he told you at all about some land of his in Oxfordshire?
Yes, Sowerby, he has. Intending to sell it, I believe. Raise enough to pay what he owes you.
Yeah, that's right. And he's been very dilatory about it, too. But, of course, he's so very afraid of his ancient mother. Terrified of what she'll say when she learns why he needs such a large sum of money. Perhaps you might do me a great favour, Robarts, and write to Lufton.
Well?
Tell him that I'm finding the delay in this business very inconvenient. He'll do anything for you, I know. And since, in all probability, he'll neither be here nor at Gatherum Castle, I won't get a chance to talk to him for a good few weeks. By the way, I hear that you've been invited to go on to Gatherum.
Yes, I was informed this evening.
You've accepted, I take it?
Well, no, I haven't.
What?
I very much doubt, Sowerby, if I can afford the time.
Of course you can.
I am not a man of pleasure, as you are. I have parish duties to get back to.
Nonsense, Robarts.
Oh, but I do, I assure you.
Well, naturally, there are bound to be duties. Just a few, but You employ a curate, do you not? Let him perform them. I know full well, though, that it's not your parish duties that cause you concern at all.
Is it not?
No, you dread the wrath of the Framley Dowager. You're in as bad a way as her son, Robarts. She has you tied hand and foot.
Not true. If it were, I wouldn't be here now, would I?
My dear friend, listen. I have much regard for you, and would not like to see you throw away a good chance when it has come your way. It's possible, I suppose, that you're quite content to live at Framley for the rest of your life and to warm yourself in Lady Lufton's sunshine. But if you have higher aspirations, as I think you do, then it would be unwise of you to refuse the Duke of Omnium's invitation.
I would very much like to go, I assure you.
Then go you must. You said you have duties to attend to, but you also, Robarts, have a duty to yourself.
Lady Lufton regards the Duke of Omnium with revulsion and horror, for whereas she is a true blue Tory, he is a Whig, and a patron of Whigs, of men such as Sowerby. And she fears that with Sowerby's assistance, the Duke is in process of extending his baleful influence upon her own son, Lord Lufton. It is the Duke, she believes, who has persuaded Lufton to feel contempt for old-fashioned country ways, to show little interest in marriage, and every interest in what she regards as his own selfish gratification. This Omnium, this ducal incarnation of Beelzebub, has invited me to Gatherum Castle, has proposed that I should be numbered among his friends. Well, I must have risen in the world to have received an honor such as this. And by friendship with the Duke, I could rise much higher still.
Ladies and gentlemen, the carriages are here.
Yes, but I'm afraid Dr. and Mrs. Proudie are not.
It is too bad. It really is. My lecture is to commence at 7.
Sorry, Harold, but we can't leave without the Proudies.
Dear brother, please. You're not to call my husband Harold anymore.
Oh, am I not?
No, indeed. He has lectured me so much already, lectured all of us concerning his new pet topic, that he is to be addressed as Baron Borneo now.
Thank you, Harriet.
Then you, Mrs. Smith, ought to be Lady Papua.
Oh, yes, yes, I insist upon the title.
And you, Mr. Robarts, are henceforth Bishop of the Moluccas.
I'm much obliged, Miss Dunstable. I'll have a tolerable income, I hope.
Well, you'll never be short of spices. You know, these South Sea Islanders sound so marvellous. I think I shall have to marry one of them. Oh, now look, here's the rest of the party.
At last.
Good afternoon.
Dr. Proudie. Yes? I thought that in your carriage, you and Mrs. Proudie might be accompanied by my sister.
Lady Papua.
And by Mr. Robarts.
The Bishop of Moluccas.
What? Who?
While Miss Dunstable...
Oh, no. I must travel with Mrs. Proudie.
Must you?
Yes.
Why must you?
She promised she would finish telling me about her wicked, wanton former chaplain.
The bishop's former chaplain, I think.
Yes, you mean...
Mr. Slope.
Yes. Fie, Mr. Slope.
We're rather late, I think.
Oh, only by an hour or so.
Everyone is being patient, I must say.
Oh, English folk invariably are, if they think they'll be getting something free of charge.
Bishop.
What? Yes.
Mr. Harding is here.
What? Who?
Mr. Harding. The former warden of Hiram's Hospital.
Oh, Mr. Harding. Yes, certainly. Where should he be, my dear?
Ladies and gentlemen.
You know, I should like to give a lecture someday. I should like it almost as much as preaching a sermon.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, well, he's made an encouraging start, Lady Papua.
Oh, yes, he has them in the palm of his hand.
My friend.
This bench will seem very hard in the second hour.
Brother dearest, this bench feels very hard already.
My friend, far, far away along the track which the equator makes for itself through distant oceans lies a group of grand, magnificent islands rich in exotic spices and glorious fruits. Civilization! Oh, civilization!
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear, indeed. We are done for now.
Oh, civilization, that ennoblest man and makest him divine.
The lecture is having a profound influence upon your bishop, Mr. Robarts.
What?
Oh, yes.
It's affecting Mrs. Proudie, too. She looks quite upset.
But surely,
my friends, my dear friends, if we are to offer help to these South Sea Aborigines, it is to the power of civilization that we must look. Therefore...
And to Christianity, surely, Mr. Smith, and to Christianity.
Oh, well.
We must look to Christianity, must we not?
Christianity, of course.
And Sabbath day observance in particular.
Sabbath day observance.
The islanders will never prosper, Mr. Smith, unless they keep the Sabbath holy. You should remember that.
I can't say I much care for Mrs. Proudie as a rule, but on this occasion I think she spoke to very good effect. Mr. Harold Smith never recovered from the lady's interruption. Civilization had lost, and Mrs. Proudie had won. I have spent the night at the Bishop's Palace. Wasn't at all keen on going there, but I thought it politic to accept the Proudie's kind invitation.
Tea, Mr. Robarts.
Thank you. Yes, the plan is for me to join the rest of the party at the Dragon of Wantley, and then for all of us to go back to Chaldecott's in time for the morning service.
Ah, indeed. Your charity sermon. Christianity, at least, will get a mention there.
Yes.
Tell me, Mr. Robarts, it is your custom to hold 3 Sunday services at Framley, is it not?
No, Mrs. Proudie.
Oh? It ought to be. The church, Mr. Robarts, the church. There is no better place, surely, for your parishioners to spend the Sabbath. The bishop, I should advise you, intends to express a very strong opinion on this subject later this month. You will, I'm certain, attend to his wishes. Mr. Robarts, you have a very fine living at Framley.
Yes, it's comfortable enough.
£900 per annum, I believe.
Yes.
And you, such a young man still. Lady Lufton must think very highly of you. And it was she, was it not, who introduced you to your wife, who had some money herself? You have fallen on your feet, Mr. Robarts. Indeed, you have. I trust you will not take your good fortune for granted.
Having assured Mrs. Proudie that I would do no such thing, I went from the palace to the Dragon of Wantley, where the rest of the party had spent the night. And there, to my distress, I found that though it was already 8:30, not one of them had yet gone down for breakfast.
Oh, Robarts! Come help me shave.
Sir, but we should be heading back to Chaldecott's by now.
Nonsense. Plenty of time.
I think not. And it wouldn't do for me to be late for the service.
It wouldn't do for any of us to be late. Oh, pass me a towel, will you? Yeah, much obliged.
I'll go on ahead, Sabi. If you don't mind, I'll hire a gig.
Don't be absurd. No need for that. I'll tell you what you can do, though. You can see that the tea is made, and you can ask for the bill. You can pay it, too, if you like.
I did my best to hasten proceedings short of paying the bill, but it was gone 9:00 before breakfast began, and a leisurely enough affair it was, too. You see, the Chaldecott set, by and large, have no concept of punctuality. Nor are they much inclined to be hurried.
I should rather like another 1/2 cup if it's in the pot.
Certainly, Harriet.
Mr. Sowerby, please. Mrs. Smith.
Yes, Mr. Robarts?
I shall hire that gig after all.
A gig? Oh, how exciting. Perhaps I should come with you, Mr. Robarts, and have a go at driving it.
No, Miss Dunstable. You'll be much happier in the carriage with me.
Well, dearest Fanny, in due course we all set off on a 12-mile gallop and reached the church late, of course, and my charity sermon, parts of which I had hastily revised lest it provoke ridicule among the Chaldecott set, went off without special notice, which was as much as I could have wished for it in the circumstances. But now, my love, I have something to tell you which is even more astounding than the various dissipations already described.
Next week there is to be a party of folk at Gatherham Castle, and I have been persuaded to join them. Gatherum Castle? Oh, my dearest, no. The Duke of Omnium expressly sent me an invitation, and everyone here, the bishop included, said that my refusing it would seem very strange, nay, offensive, if I could not offer a real reason for doing so. Oh, but Mark, is not the Duke of Omnium reason enough himself? Is not the Duke thoroughly obnoxious and damnable? Is he not immoral in every way? My own darling will not be pleased when she reads this. But she will understand why I am going. Yes, Mark, yes, I fear I do. Of course, Lady Lufton will have to be informed of my whereabouts. She will. Oh, dear. But I know, my love, that you will make all as smooth for me as you possibly can.
Gatherum Castle?
Yes, Lady Lufton.
Your husband is going from Chaldecott's house to stay at Gatherum Castle?
That is his intention.
Then I must tell you fairly, I have done with him.
Oh, Lady Lufton, don't say so.
But what else can I say? You would not wish me to speak falsehoods, would you? Your husband has every right to make his own choice, but he cannot live with two sets of people. Not if I belong to one and the Duke of Omnium to the other.
But he assured me it was impossible for him to refuse the invitation, not without giving offence.
That's nonsense. It's more than nonsense. It's hypocrisy.
No.
Oh, indeed.
Lady Lufton, my husband may have been ill-judged, but he is no hypocrite.
Very well, my dear. I dare say you know him better than I. But he has certainly betrayed me.
Betrayed you? No.
I gave your husband a position in the world. Gave him an income that is sufficient, I would have thought, for a gentleman's want.
Lady Lufton.
I gave him my trust, my confidence. But he has broken that trust, betrayed that confidence. He has betrayed me and he has deceived me.
Lady Lufton, you are very hard upon him. I did not expect this from a friend.
My dear, I speak my mind whether I am with friends or not.
He has done nothing to deceive you. He asked that I tell you of his plans.
Well, yes. He could not very easily have kept me in the dark. He could not have expected to neglect his work and to go and live with gamblers and adulterers without my getting to know of it sooner or later.
You forget yourself. You are not justified in saying those things. Whether he is right or wrong in staying at Gatherum Castle is not for you or me to decide. He is the judge of his own actions.
Oh, and when he leaves you with the butcher's bill unpaid and no money to buy food for the children, who will be the judge then?
Not you, Lady Lufton. And I tell you, if such bad days ever came, I shouldn't go to you with my troubles, not after this.
Very well, my dear. You may go to the Duke of Omnium, if that suits you better.
Oh, you are unfair. You are unjust.
Am I indeed? You know this is too bad. It really is. You discover that I refuse to congratulate you on your husband's new companion, and then you scold me for it.
But Lady Lufton...
No, no. I have heard enough, I assure you. Quite enough. Goodbye.
I have arrived at Gatherum Castle. I hope I will find my stay here worthwhile. For in truth, the previous week and more have not afforded me uninterrupted pleasure. And yet I think despite that, it behoves me to break free of Lady Lufton's despotism. It behoves me to rise in the world. Does it not?
Aha, we are next, Mr. Robarts.
You think so?
Yes, the great man's eye is cast upon us.
Good evening to you.
Good evening.
Good evening, Your Grace.
I am Miss Dunstable. This gentleman here is Mr. Mark Robarts.
How do you
and
do, sir?
And you, I believe, are the Duke of Omnium.
I am, and delighted to meet you both. Miss Dunstable, I was advised that you would be bringing a parrot with you, and I have given the strictest advice to my servants in order to ensure his comfort and well-being.
Oh, well, that was so very good of you. But I'm afraid I haven't brought the parrot after all.
You haven't? Dear, oh dear, oh, I do call that unkind. I had an aviary built on purpose. Oh. Is it too late to send for him?
I'm afraid it is. He's gone on a trip with my doctor. But I have brought my poodle.
Ah, yes, I knew I could rely upon the poodle.
Well, now, where is he, I wonder? Pompey! Oh, I declare, I must go and look for him. What if they put him among your Grace's dogs? His morals would be utterly destroyed.
That remark wasn't intended to be personal, I hope.
Well, Your Grace, I couldn't say, but knowing Miss Dunstable, I'm sure she meant no disrespect by it.
No more than I deserve, at least. Now, Mr. Robarts, I'm so happy to make your acquaintance. You're a friend of Lord Lufton, I believe.
That's right. How are things at Framley?
May I come in?
Lady Lufton.
I wish to request your pardon, my dear.
Oh, Lady Lufton.
I should not have spoken of your husband as I did. And therefore, I am here to ask you to forgive me.
Oh.
You will forgive me, won't you? I have not been at all happy since you left my den this morning. And I don't suppose that you have either. But Fanny, dearest, we know each other too well, do we not? And love each other too much to quarrel for very long.
Oh, yes, Lady Lufton. Yes, indeed.
So, let us have a talk, shall we, and resolve our differences.
Yes, yes, let us do that.
My dear, you were quite right to stand up for Mr. Robarts this morning. A woman has no greater duty to anyone than what she owes to her husband. So I love you for what you did. Loved you, in truth, this morning. Though you were a little fierce with me.
Yes.
And I dare say I was a little fierce myself. But enough of that. About this good man of yours.
Dear Lady Lufton, you must forgive him. Please, please.
Well, since you ask me to, I will. I forgive him.
Thank you.
And we'll have nothing more said about that horrid Duke of Omnium, either now or when your husband returns.
I am so much obliged to you, Lady Lufton.
You have no need to be. But I have to tell you, my dear, Mr. Robarts would be much better off without the Duke of Omnium and Gatherum Castle.
Oh, I know. Much better off.
I'm glad to hear you say so. If you'll take my advice, Fanny, you'll use your influence, as the good, dear, sweet wife you are, to prevent your husband going to Gatherum any more, or for that matter, to Chaldecott's. I'm an old woman, and he is young, and it's natural that he should think me behind the times. But he'll benefit more if he sticks to his old friends. Of that, my dear, there can be no doubt.
I hoped that by coming to Gatherum Castle I might make a stand against Lady Lufton's power, demonstrate some independence of spirit, but I do not think I have made much progress yet. Else I would not have been so anxious to learn what Lady Lufton said about my being here, nor would I have been as relieved as I was when I read dear Fanny's letter, when I learned that there will be no reproaches from her ladyship. You poor fellow. Whatever you may do or say, you are as afraid of the old woman as ever.
Oh, there you are, Robarts. Admiring the view, are you? It's turned a bit cool for that, I thought. Get a walk.
Very well.
I've had a letter from Lufton.
Oh, yes. I did write to him, as you asked me to. Mentioned that bit of land in Oxfordshire.
Well, thank you, Robarts, but as it transpires, he won't need to sell it now.
Will he not?
No. Lady Lufton sent her son £5,000 as a present.
Oh, that was very good of her.
Yes, wasn't it? I wish I had a mother.
I can recount something of the history of this business. There was an argument over money between Lord Lufton and Sowerby. One or two unsettled gambling claims. And Lufton, who was very angry about it, asked me to help resolve the conflict. Introduced me to Sowerby specifically for the purpose. Well, I found it impossible to believe that a man of Sowerby's standing could have attempted to defraud him. Lufton, I decided, may well have been in error, and I persuaded him to have the case referred to a private arbiter, a fellow recommended by Sowerby. The decision went against Lord Lufton to the tune of £5,000. And it is this sum which his mother has recently provided. But I must tell you, I know Sowerby rather better now than I did, and I have heard men talk of him in less than glowing terms. So whether indeed Lord Lufton was in error, I confess I'm not so certain.
Well, you see, Mr. Robarts, you are an especially valued commodity this afternoon. Most of the men have disappeared.
I suppose they've gone off to chase a fox again.
No, no, Miss Dunstable. They are in conference.
Yes, at the instigation of the Duke. They are to talk about politics. They're to talk about the future of the nation.
Oh, well, perhaps they'll do better at that than hunting foxes.
Have they any particular agenda, do you know, Mrs. Smith?
I do know, and I promised Harold that I wouldn't tell. They're planning to ditch the Prime Minister.
Are they? Is it in their power to ditch the Prime Minister?
Well, they think so.
Why should they wish to ditch him?
Probably, Mr. Robarts, to show that it is in their power to do so.
Probably, yes. But they'll say, well, my husband will, that the country requires it, that the public mind is awake to the need for change, that the PM and his ministry must give way, or else the country cannot be saved.
Well, I understand very little about these things, of course, but I rather thought that our present Prime Minister had not been altogether unsuccessful.
You are right, Miss Dunstable, he has not, but that poses no difficulty. The argument will be that he has been too successful, too triumphant, altogether too haughty.
How curious.
Curious indeed. But if the ministry should be forced out within the year...
6 months is the timetable, I believe.
We shall know precisely when and where the plot was hatched.
Ah, evening, Mark.
Evening.
Come in. Close the door. I understand you're off home tomorrow.
That's right, Sowerby. First thing.
Well, I'm glad you could spare me half an hour. I need your advice.
Advice?
Advice. Assistance. The situation is, Mark, I'm hard up. Infernally so, just at the present. And I rather think that if I don't get hold of some ready cash very soon, I shall be ruined.
I'm sorry to hear it. Very sorry. Could not Harold Smith lend you the money?
Harold Smith? He's never lent a shilling in his life. It's deuced hard, Mark, but if I can't put my hands on £400 in the next 2 days, the whole game's up.
I'm very sorry, Sowerby.
Of course, I'd ask Lufton, but he's not here.
Well, to be honest, I think Lord Lufton has obliged you enough. 5,000 is a tidy sum.
Oh, it is, it is. But none of that money came to me, you know. It all went to that ruffian, Tozer.
Tozer?
The vile moneylender I was compelled to have dealings with. You see, Mark, look, I don't mean to say a word against Lufton. Soul of honour, I'm sure. But he was wrong all through that wretched affair. And his mistake has cost me very dear. Because all the time we were disputing the matter, I had to make good the money that I knew he owed me. Had to borrow it. What's vexing, of course, is that this matter of the £400 has caught up with me now, just when I was about to put all my financial troubles far behind me.
Oh, with the help of Miss Dunstable, you mean?
The very same, if you have me.
Well, if you're short of cash, why not ask her for it?
Ask Miss Dunstable? Ask the woman I intend to marry? No, I've not descended quite so low. No, I'd rather lose her than do that.
Then why don't you set about marrying her? She seems fond enough of your society. You should go to her and have done with it.
Oh, yes, Mark. That's the point. Marrying Miss Dunstable would relieve me of all my difficulties, but I really can't marry her until the present problem is overcome. With regard to the £400, I mean. You see, Mark, if I had that money, I could get everything settled. Settled for good. Now, I tell you what, Mark. If you could help me in this, I'd never forget it. Never. And there'll be a time, I'm sure, when I can do something for you.
Sowerby, I haven't got £400. Haven't even got 50.
Well, of course you don't. There isn't a man at Gatherum who has £400 at his banker's. Unless it be the Duke. No, no, Mark. I wasn't expecting you to hand me the cash.
What is it you want, then?
Your name, dear fellow. Your name on the back of this bill. You've done this kind of thing before, I take it?
No, Sowerby, never.
Well, it's very simple. By signing here, you thereby give me permission to use your name and your cast iron reputation in order to raise money not exceeding the amount specified on the bill. £400 in this case. Here's a pen.
Upon my word, I'd rather not sign, Sowerby.
Why? What are you afraid of? Mark, dear fellow, you'll never see or hear the bill again. I do assure you.
When would the bill be due?
In 3 months. See, it's written here.
And if you did not have the money by then, it would fall to me to pay the bill, would it not?
My dear Mark, I have always, always settled such bills by the time they're due. Always. And if you hear anything to the contrary, then I should very much like you to tell me. I mean, I've been short of money from time to time, but it's never quite come to that.
But as a clergyman, it would be very wrong of me.
As a clergyman? Oh, Mark, if you don't wish to help out a friend, then say so, but let's not have that sort of humbug, if you don't mind. Clergymen's names appear very frequently on the backs of bills. More so, I've imagined, than any other class of men. Now, Mark, please. You won't throw me over when I'm so hard pushed. Just right. Accepted. Mark Robarts, across there. And you can put the whole business out of your mind. But you will have obliged me, dear friend, for her.
I have done wrong. I knew as much the moment I left Sowerby's room, and straight away I began to remember things which for some reason I could not recall when I was with him. Things which Lord Lufton had told me concerning his quarrel with Sowerby, and stories I had heard elsewhere concerning Sowerby's unreliability in money matters. Oh, I have done wrong. Very wrong. Within 3 months, I'll be troubled again about that bill, I'm sure of it. Oh, why did I ever go to Gatherum Castle?
Ah, hello. Whoa, steady, old boy. You'll have me and your brother into the fire.
Come, Francis. I'll lift you up. There.
Thank you, Francis.
Now, Mark, let me have Harry and you can take off your coat. I wish you'd wrapped up more warmly. There's a chill wind today.
I was fine. Didn't notice it, my dear. Oh, but it is good to be back. There is nothing like being at home.
There's nothing like having you home, my dearest. It's the homecoming season, I think. Lord Lufton arrived at Framley Court early yesterday.
Oh, did he?
He's staying until March.
March?
Yes, I was surprised too. It's not like Lord Lufton to show such compliance.
No, Fanny, no, it is not. I imagine his mother's in good spirits.
She is triumphant. Indeed, her ladyship is in excellent humour about everything now, so you need not mention Gatherum Castle to her.
She was very angry, I suppose, when she heard that I was going.
Well, to tell you the truth, she was. She blazed up quite hot.
And said all manner of horrid things about me?
About the Duke, she did. She's never liked the Duke of Omnium, nor have I, Mr. Robarts, for that matter.
Oh, he's not as bad as he's painted. Did you and Lady Lufton quarrel?
Violently. And then she made peace. She was so perfectly kind, so full of love and truth and honesty. There's nobody quite like her, Mark.
That's true.
She's better by far than all the dukes that ever wore ermine and whatever it is that dukes wear.
Well, at least one of them wears horns and a tail, if you and her ladyship are to be believed.
I will tell Fanny about the business with the bill, but not yet. Tomorrow, perhaps. Coming home has been so pleasant that I should not wish to spoil this day. £400. That's nearly half a year's income, and I have no savings to call on. Why must I be ambitious? Do I not have at Framley Parsonage all that a man's heart could desire? Well, I am ambitious, and perhaps that is not too grave a fault. But thus far, for ambition's sake, the path I've followed has been a very sorry one indeed.
So, Mark, you have been among the Philistines.
Yes, most certainly I have. And I am exceedingly glad to be returned.
Your stables are busy.
Yes, I brought all 7 of my nags from Leicestershire. They're fine beasts. You must come for a ride today.
I'd like that, Lufton. Thank you.
Good.
While I was among the Philistines...
Yes?
I heard that you've agreed a settlement with Sowerby.
True, I have. Do you know at what price?
5,000 was mentioned?
Well, yes. That's on top of the 3,000 that I paid before.
And all in a matter where, I tell you honestly, I didn't owe him a thing. Whatever I do in future, I'll have no more dealings with Sowerby. That's quite definite.
But he hasn't... Well, he hasn't cheated you.
Well, possibly, possibly not. He's been sharp at any rate. But it's finished now, and I intend to banish the whole wretched business from my mind.
Yes. You may be interested to know, however, that I too have had dealings with Sowerby.
You? When?
While I was at Gatherum Castle, I put my name to a bill for him. For £400.
You're joking. A man in your position would never do such a thing.
But I have, Lufton. He asked me the last night I was there, said no bill of his had ever yet been dishonored.
What? What? My dear fellow, the pocketbooks of money dealers are stuffed full of his dishonored bills. £400, you say?
Yes.
When does the bill fall due?
In 3 months.
Have you thought at all how you will find the money?
Well, I know I can't. Not in that time. I suppose that I would have to ask the bank to renew the bill and then pay it off by degrees.
And pay interest and bank expenses and commission into the bargain.
Yes. Of course, this is all assuming that Sowerby doesn't take up the bill himself.
Mark, he's as likely to do that as to take up the national debt.
He does have hopes of a profitable marriage.
Yes, so I gather. To the ointment of Lebanon woman. But even should he be successful, it would make no difference to you. Chaldicott's is mortgaged to the Duke of Omnium, so any money that Sowerby gets his hands on will pass straight to him. Small fry such as yourself, I fear, will not get a penny.
I have received sorrowful news. My dear father was struck last week by a sudden and rapid illness, and now he is no more. So I am journeying to Exeter for the funeral, and so on. His death could... Well, it could make a difference. To the matter of the bill, I mean. My father was not an unsuccessful man. And though I have brothers and sisters aplenty, there must be some prospect of my getting a windfall. Must there not? Enough, at least, to cancel out the £400. Oh, you see what a wretched fellow I have become. Wretched indeed. My father, whom I loved, he is dead. But the grief I feel is already yielding, it seems, to hopes for his money.
And does the letter suggest when he intends to return?
Friday, Lord Lufton, is the most likely day.
Mm. Well, if that suits him, but I told him that he mustn't hurry back.
He also says that he is bringing one of his sisters with him, Lucy, who was living with her father. Mark has invited her to stay with us at the parsonage and, well, join our family. I hope that this is agreeable to you, Lady Lufton.
Oh, indeed. Mr. Robarts has done right. I take it that you approve the notion.
Yes, I do.
Good. I seem to remember the young lady. She was at your wedding, my dear.
Yes.
Rather small, is she not? And very retiring.
Small and retiring? Is that the best that can be said about her?
Ludovic, some young ladies must be small. And some, at least, ought to be retiring.
Well, she must have been very retiring. I don't remember her at all.
Well, I wouldn't say she is beautiful, but she is not plain, and she has a pleasant manner. Oh, I pray she is not too stricken in her grief. Come in.
I thought I would see if you have everything you need.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Are you still very cold?
No. No, I have nearly thawed.
Well, dearest Lucy, I'm sure you will be used to us soon, and I hope, too, that we shall make you comfortable and as happy as you can be.
Oh, I will be happy here, with you and Mark. But, oh, poor Papa.
Oh, I know, my dearest.
Poor Papa.
I heard the will read while I was in Exeter. In my father's opinion, God's providence has already placed me in a position of relative financial ease,
and since I am so comfortably situated, I am, as a result, to get nothing at all of my father's money. Not a shilling. It was hard, very hard, to smile and look gracious while this news was delivered, and I shall not say if I succeeded. Within me, though, my heart sank. What must I do now? One thing I ought to do is to delay no more, but tell Fanny straight away about this wretched bill of Sowerby's. But I cannot. I do not have the courage.
My dear, it is a great pleasure for me to be able to renew our acquaintance.
Thank you, Lady Lufton.
Though I wish it had not been in such unfortunate circumstances.
Yes.
I was wondering, Fanny, whether you might all be able to dine with us.
Thank you very much. You name the day, Lady Lufton. We never have many engagements.
Well, perhaps Thursday might be convenient. What do you think, Miss Robarts?
Oh, Lady Lufton, I...
You won't meet anyone, I assure you. Only my son. So it won't be like visiting. Fanny will tell you that going over to Framley Court is just like stepping from one room in the parsonage to another. Is that not so, Fanny?
Well, yes, indeed. Mark and I are invited over so often that I fear we are in danger of taking it for granted.
Miss Robarts, we think of ourselves as a sort of happy family here at Framley, and we're delighted to have the opportunity of including you in the menage.
Lady Lufton, you are so very kind, but I really...
Yes, my dear?
Well, I...
It is perhaps a little too soon.
Oh, yes, of course.
Oh, forgive me.
My dear, there is nothing to forgive.
She is very quiet, is Lucy, and always was so, says Mark, ever since she was a child. She is neither open nor demonstrative, as I would like her to be, has not thrown herself and her sorrows into my heart as I had hoped she would. But why should I be disappointed? Simply because she does not do, perhaps, what I would do. She is different from me, for which both she and I should be thankful. And because she is different, I love and value her all the more.
Ah, Mrs. Robarts. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. Now, Mrs. Robarts, your sister-in-law and I have not been formally introduced.
Oh, forgive me, Lucy, this is Lord Lufton.
I'm very pleased to meet you.
Likewise.
I'm surprised to see you on your own, Lord Lufton. I thought that Captain Culpepper was with you.
He was, but he's gone to Gatherham Castle for a day's pheasant shooting. Don't tell my mother.
I won't, I promise. But there are other things I do wish to tell her. Is she at home?
She is.
Then I will see her now, I think.
Well, if Miss Robarts is going on to the parsonage...
Lucy? Yes. Yes, I am.
Well, that's where I'm bound to. So I will walk with Miss Robarts, if I may, and protect her from the evil spirits of the Framley Road.
Thank you, Lord Lufton. Goodbye, then.
Miss Robarts, you have been here a long time, a month at least, without my having the pleasure of talking with you. My mother and I were beginning to think that you were being confined against your will, and that I would have to find a way of setting you free.
I've had a great sorrow lately.
Oh, yes, Miss Robarts. Forgive me, I was joking. Or trying to. I never knew my own father, but I can well understand what a loss you have had, for I met your father a few times when I was a boy.
Did you?
Yes. Yes, he came to Framley to consult with my mother about Mark's education. And mine, indeed, since Mark and I were schoolmates. And I remember that your father was very kind to me.
He was very kind to everyone.
I'm sure. And I'm sure, too, that he was adored by his family.
Oh, he was, Lord Lufton. Indeed he was. Such a dear, good man. No words from him were ever harsh or unpleasant. And he was as generous as the day.
I hope I haven't caused you distress by speaking of your father.
Distress? No. No, I am glad that you have spoken of him, and that I have too. Till today it has almost seemed that such talk was forbidden, even with Mark, as if it was wrong to mention my father, or as if it might intensify my grief. But nothing, I think, could be more welcome.
I gather you were conversing with Lord Lufton this afternoon.
Yes.
I hope you liked your new companion.
Yes, pretty well.
pretty well. Perhaps not very complimentary to his lordship.
I was not intending to be complimentary.
Lucy doesn't pay compliments, my dear. She's a great deal too matter-of-fact for that.
What I meant was that I had no real opportunity for judging. I was only with him for a few minutes.
Ah, but there are some of our sex, Lucy, who would give their eyes for a few minutes in that gentleman's company. He's valued very highly, you know. Has a facility with the ladies, can make himself agreeable to them at a mere half-minute's warning.
Well, perhaps he lacks such a warning in my case.
Poor sister. He'd come over here to chat with me about his horses. I fear he must have been thinking more about them than about you.
Yes. Yes, very likely.
Lady Lufton has repeated her kind invitation to dinner, and this time Lucy has felt able to accept it. And so, for the first time, she is at Framley Court, and there are other guests, too, aside from Mark and myself. I mean the Grantleys. Dr. Grantley, the Archdeacon of Barchester.
Good heavens, good heavens.
Mrs. Grantley, his wife.
No, 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 Mr. Robarts. The Hartletops, I'm afraid, are not at all in our line.
And the Grantley's daughter, Griselda.
I should like a lemonade, please.
Griselda is very near to Lucy's age. Beautiful, decidedly, and tall and slight, but somewhat statuesque, perhaps. A little lacking in vivacity. Though if these be faults, I don't think Lord Lufton finds them so. There is, at any rate, enough about Miss Griselda Grantley to engage his attention. She plays the piano quite prettily.
I am inclined to think, Lady Lufton, that Robarts could not have helped it. After all, he was specifically asked to preach at Charlicott's, so I understand. It would have been strange to refuse.
But then, Archdeacon, then he went on to Gatherum Castle.
Gatherum Castle? Oh, dear.
Such a dangerous house, you know. Such horrid people there.
Yes, indeed. Yet, though the castle air was impure, it was less impure, I am certain, because Mr. Robarts was present. Oh, but good heavens, what blasphemy.
Archdeacon.
Yes, my dear.
Griselda is at the piano.
Yes, my dear. How could I possibly talk of impure air? The bishop was at Gatherum Castle, too, and the bishop's wife.
Yes, Dr. Grantley, they were there.
And while we are listening, some of us, to Griselda's recital, I notice that Lucy has removed herself at some distance, is sat in a corner of the room leafing through a book. And in time, Lord Lufton notices this too and quietly approaches her.
Miss Robarts? Miss Robarts?
Yes?
I fear you have cut us all.
Oh, well, I didn't mean to.
Of course you didn't. The fault was ours in leaving you to yourself.
I'm quite used to being alone, Lord Lufton.
Then we must break you of the habit. You must become a dear friend, as Mark is and his wife. You won't refuse the offer, will you?
No, I won't refuse it.
The Archdeacon and Mrs. Grantley will have gone in a couple of days. But Griselda is to remain for Christmas. And you shall stay here too, if you are willing, and get to know her better. She is very handsome, is she not?
Oh, yes. Very handsome. Nobody can doubt that.
Sowerby! Sowerby!
Why, this young Robert. Haven't seen you for a good while.
It's very nearly 3 months, in fact. Sowerby, I'd like a quick word with you.
A quick word at a quick pace, eh? Mind the jump.
It's concerning that bill I signed for you.
A bill?
Yes. For £400. I want to know what you're doing about it.
You signed a bill for £400? Rather green of you, wasn't it?
Yes. Perhaps it was. I'd like to know what your intentions are, nonetheless.
What a ruffian you are. Spoiling my day's sport. Anyone but a vicar would be too good a Christian to inflict such a cruelty. A bill for 400, did you say? Yes. Tozer has it, the money dealer.
And what will Tozer do with it?
Use it to make money, whichever way he can.
Will he bring the bill to me on the 20th?
The 20th?
When the bill's due.
Oh, no. Cat doesn't kill a mouse since he's played with it. Oh, my word, Robarts. You are clean. Deliciously so.
You see, I wouldn't want anyone visiting me at the parsonage.
No, there's not the slightest fear of that. Look! He's away! Over by Cosset's barn. Come on! Tally-ho! And never mind, Tozer. Sufficient for the day is the evil thereof.
I have received a letter from Sowerby and a bill. For a brief moment, I rejoiced. I thought it was the bill for the £400 which Sowerby was yielding up. But no, it is a second bill. Sowerby says that since neither of us can raise the money, which is now indeed more than £400, for the money dealer has his perquisites and pickings to be taken care of, a second bill for £500 must be signed and signed straight away, or else I may begin to be pestered by the money dealer and by lawyers too. Dear God, I have been such a fool, and I'll be a double fool if I sign a second time. That first folly, that act of madness at Gatherum Castle, has thrown me into deep and dangerous waters, and my efforts to escape, I fear, may only serve to choke me and pull me down still further.
Mr. Crawley, good morning.
Morning, Mr. Robarts.
You and your family are in good health, are you?
Quite well, through God's mercy.
I had not expected to see you in Lady Lufton's gig.
She sent it round, asked me to visit her.
Did she indeed?
It's an important matter, I hope, for I've much to be doing in my parish. Good day, Mr. Robarts.
Hogglestock is the name of Crawley's parish. A poor parish, not part of Lady Lufton's property. And Crawley and his family are pitiably poor themselves. Nor is it easy to extend them any kindness, for Crawley is a stern, proud man, a man who seeks help from God alone, who has no ambition. A man, you might say, as unlike myself as could be found. I should not much care to be Mr. Crawley of Hogglestock, but I do not much care at present to be Mark Robarts of Framley. For I have acted very foolishly, very wrongly, and I have brought upon myself the threat of utter ruin.
Mr. Crawley, I requested your presence here so that I might ask for your help with regard to my own vicar here at Framley, Mr. Mark Robarts.
Ah, yes.
He is an excellent parish clergyman.
You think so?
Oh, yes, Mr. Crawley, I do. He is excellent. However...
Indeed, indeed. However...
He got this living at such a young age, Mr. Crawley, that he is not perhaps quite as steady as I could wish him to be. The fault, no doubt, was as much mine as his in placing him in such a position so early in his life.
Yes, no doubt.
But that's past remedy now. Mr. Robarts will in time become a credit to his profession. Of that I'm sure. But at present...
He finds it hard not to succumb to temptation.
In some measure, yes.
Spends much of his time away from Framley, I'm told, at places such as Chaldicotts.
Ah, but...
And Gatherum Castle, the Duke of Omnium's place.
Yes, indeed. Let us not, however, paint too black a picture of Mr. Robarts. It was only a few occasions that he went away, you know. And that business is all behind us now. He understands my views on it.
Perhaps. But there's the hunting also.
Ah, well, it is the hunting which I wanted to discuss with you.
He's off with the hounds 2 or 3 times a week, I understand.
Oh, no, Mr. Crawley. Very seldom above once, I'm sure. And even then it's chiefly with a view to being with my son, who is a particular friend of his.
I don't see how that makes it any better, Lady Lufton.
Do you not?
In truth, no. Hunting is a vicious pastime. Whatever one's reasons for indulging in it, it is vicious and cruel and promotes profligacy and turpitude.
Well, I don't know about that. But it is, at any rate, unbecoming in a clergyman. I would tell him so myself, but I rather fear he might feel aggrieved, as might my son, if I were to interfere personally in this regard. So... I wonder if I might ask you to see Mr. Robarts
and try to encourage him to discontinue the pastime.
The bill which Mr. Sowerby sent me this morning lies here on my desk, as yet unsigned. I must sign this bill, says Sowerby, and without delay, for the first bill has fallen due, and since neither he nor I can find the necessary £400, he must draw on my name for a further £500. I should never have got into this mess. Should never have taken such a risk to oblige a man like Sowerby.
Yes?
Mr. Roberts.
Crawley?
I've come here on unpleasant business.
Unpleasant business?
Yes, Mr. Roberts, but I am not one to flinch from it.
No, Mr. Crawley, I'm sure. Do take a seat. He cannot mean the bill I've signed, surely. The vicar of Hogglestock cannot possibly have learned anything about that.
Well, Mr. Roberts, I shall go to the root of the matter. There is nothing like going to the root of the matter, in my view.
No, indeed.
People are saying that your present mode of life is one that does not befit a soldier in Christ's army.
People? Which people?
Those around you. The people of your neighborhood who would look to you as a lamp to guide them, but who find instead that you are wont to consort with jockeys and hunters, that you gallop after the hounds and take your place with the vainest of worldly pleasure seekers.
So it is not the bill. That's some relief. Lady Lufton has put him up to this, encouraged him to preach at me, if he needed encouragement.
Mr. Roberts, if what is said about you is true, then it is very wrong. For you owe it to those around you to live a godly, cleanly life, and you owe it also, in a much higher way, to your Father who is in heaven. I would ask you, therefore, are you doing your best to lead a godly, cleanly life?
Well, Mr. Crawley...
Are you?
There are but few of us, I suppose, who could safely say yes to such a question.
Perhaps. But are there very many, do you think, who would find the question as painful to answer as you do? And even if there were, are you content to be numbered among them? If you are, then I am mistaken in you. Speak, my brother. If it be possible, open your heart.
I have done wrong.
Yes, yes, you have. There has been a terrible falling off, Mr. Robarts. Terrible indeed. But you are not, I know it, a thoughtless sinner, such as many of those parishioners of yours whose sins it is your duty to crush. You have high aspirations, or you did have, certainly. But you are become a hunting parson, and you ride with a happy mind among blasphemers and mocking devils. Oh, Mr. Robarts, what are you? If you are not an ignorant sinner, must I call you a hypocrite?
No, not a hypocrite. Not a hypocrite.
No, I don't believe you are. You are one who, through carelessness, has stumbled in the dark and who has bruised and cut his feet. Henceforth, you must be wary. You must walk cautiously among the thorns and rocks. Cautiously, yet boldly, with manly courage, and yet with Christian meekness, as all of us should walk through this vale of tears.
I am back at the parsonage now. I spent Christmas at Framley Court, with Lady Lufton, with Lord Lufton, her son, and with Griselda Grantley, the Archdeacon's daughter, who is very beautiful, or considered so. I did not altogether enjoy the time I spent there, for I'm not at all used to such society. Often felt I would be far happier with a good book, a good chair, and a good fire. But there were some occasions which afforded some pleasure. I mean, in particular, when Lord Lufton contrived to remove himself from Miss Grantley and talk with me. We would talk most pleasantly, he and I, grew increasingly well acquainted. And now, I think, Lord Lufton and I have become, well, good friends.
Fanny, I wish to say a few words about your sister-in-law.
Oh, is there anything wrong?
No, my dear. Nothing is wrong, but it's always well to be on one's guard.
On one's guard, Lady Lufton?
You know how fond we are of Lucy. She is a nice, good girl, and we did so much enjoy her being with us at Christmas.
Well, she enjoyed it too. She was greatly distressed, as you know, by her father's death, but she seems so much happier now.
Yes, and I am pleased for her. She is, as I say, a good girl. But Fanny, dearest, the truth is, she and my son are getting into a way of being too much together.
Oh?
Of talking to each other too exclusively.
I see.
Oh, please understand, it is not that I suspect any evil in this matter. Suspiciousness is not in my nature.
Indeed not, Lady Lufton.
But you see, Lucy may be under the impression that Lord Lufton means more by way of his attentions to her than he really does.
You don't think Lucy is in love with him, surely?
Oh, no, no, no. No. If I thought that, my dear, I should recommend that your sister-in-law be sent away altogether. Oh, no, no. I simply feel that it would be sensible if a little management were employed. I'm sure that you understand me, Fanny, dear, with your perfect tact and good sense.
I can't believe that there's anything in it, Lady Lufton.
I'm sure there isn't. Lucy is, as I say, a nice girl, a good girl. And it would be sad if anything were to interrupt the cordial relations that exist between Framley Court and Framley Parsonage. So, Fanny, my dear, it might be prudent if you were to have a little word with her.
I know, of course, how keen Lady Lufton is that her son should marry Griselda Grantly. She and Griselda's mother have, I believe, come to a decided agreement that the match will be made. But I confess that when her ladyship spoke about offering Lucy words of caution, I did not really see the need.
Ah, Mrs. Robart. Good day to you.
And to you, Lord Lufton.
Lord Lufton wants me to learn to ride.
Oh, indeed.
This horse would carry her beautifully. He really would. His only fault is he's too soft-mouthed.
Soft-mouthed? I suppose that's the same sort of thing as a man being soft-hearted.
Exactly. You must manage both of them with a very light hand. 2 days, that's all it would take. To learn to ride, I mean. Do you think she should try, Mrs. Robart?
Lucy has no riding habit, I'm afraid.
Well, we can soon remedy that. There's one in the house, I'm sure. My sister left it on her last visit.
Oh, but Lucy wouldn't dream of taking such a liberty with your sister's possessions.
Well, indeed, I would not. Nor, secondly, would I dream of taking Lord Lufton's horse. Thirdly, I would be a good deal too frightened to ride it at all. And fourthly, a great many other reasons besides.
But that's nonsense.
Oh, no more so, Lord Lufton, than your talk of soft mouths and light hands. Now, it's getting cold.
Yes, it is.
So Mrs. Robarts and I will wish you, Lord Lufton, goodbye. I wonder what Lady Lufton would have said if I'd agreed to the riding lessons.
I don't think she'd have liked it.
Oh, I'm sure she wouldn't. I sometimes wonder if she likes Lord Lufton talking to me at all.
She certainly doesn't like it, Lucy, when she sees him flirting with you.
Flirting? Has he been flirting?
He has been paying you attentions.
Have I been flirting with him?
I didn't say that.
But Lady Lufton said it, I suppose.
Lucy!
And she asked you to lecture me about it.
Not lecture you. Put you on your guard.
On my guard?
Lucy, my dear, nobody is saying that you have done anything wrong. Quite the opposite. Your refusing Lord Lufton's offer just now is proof enough of that.
I must be on my guard, nonetheless, against falling in love.
Well?
But, Fanny, even if I were to fall in love with Lord Lufton, would it really be anything wrong?
My dear Lucy.
I wonder if Griselda Grantly was advised to be on her guard when she was staying at Framley Court. Lord Lufton should have a label put on him, as if he were a bottle. Danger. Poison. Then young innocents such as I might avoid the possibility of a tragic error.
Oh, Lucy. Well, there will be no error in this case. The danger of this particular bottle has now been pointed out to you. Lord Lufton is labelled, and you, therefore...
I am on my guard. Yes. I joked with my sister-in-law, or tried to when she spoke about Lord Lufton. But it is no joking matter, I see that. Lord Lufton has made no absolute show of affection, has said nothing, done nothing in that way. But I'm aware that in our recent conversations, he has become more familiar, more intimate than he was before, more so perhaps than ordinary friendship should permit. What his true feelings are towards me, I cannot tell. I cannot tell what my own feelings are towards him. Whether simply I am flattered by his attentions, or perhaps am touched by something deeper. But I know that there is danger here. And Lady Lufton is right. Fanny is right. To put me on my guard.
I call to say farewell. I'm leaving for town tomorrow.
Oh, indeed.
Heaven knows when we shall see each other again.
Next winter, perhaps?
Yes, for a day or two, I suppose. One can't tell.
No, at least you can't. I shall be here, I've no doubt, for I'm not of the migratory tribe myself.
I wish you were, Lucy. You should be. For in other respects, you know, you show a strong sense of adventure, which is why I like you so much. You have spirit.
Lord Lufton.
You've managed to get out of the old-fashioned grooves, and you like to act as your own guide.
Well, if I have left the old grooves, I mean to go back to them, I assure you.
And perhaps, Lucy, you have already begun to try. I feel, you know, that there is some estrangement between us, that in the past few days we have not been such friends as we were. I suppose my mother is the cause of all this.
She has said nothing to me, at least.
Oh, of course, she is as loving a mother as a son could wish for. But so great is her love that she cannot let me choose my friends for myself. Or indeed, choose my... Oh, Lucy, I cannot think that you have ceased to feel some regard for me.
No, Lord Lufton. I still feel some regard for you.
Some warm regard?
Well, yes. And it was very foolish of me to do so.
Foolish?
Yes, Lord Lufton. It was foolish indeed ever to leave that old-fashioned groove of mine, though I admit it was pleasant to appear independent and to indulge in an open friendship with you. No doubt your rank, which is so different from my own, made it seem attractive all the more.
That's nonsense.
Oh, but I'm sure it did. Oh, Lord Lufton, what will the world say of me if I allow this friendship to continue?
The world?
Yes. For I am not such a philosopher that I can disregard the world, though you perhaps can afford to do so. Well, the world, I think, will say this, that I have set my cap at a young lord.
No!
And the young lord, in return, has made an utter fool of me.
No, Lucy! The world shall say no such thing. Oh, Lucy, my own Lucy, my heart's best friend.
Please!
My love, my chosen love. And soon... my wife.
Lord Lufton, this is very wrong.
Wrong? Why? May you not marry me? May you not learn to love me?
I shall not try to learn.
But if you were to try...
No, no.
Can you not love me?
Lord Lufton, you have no right to press me further.
Oh, but I have every right. For I must learn the truth. My happiness depends on it, Lucy. I love you. Love you with all my heart. And I must know how your heart stands towards me.
I cannot love you. I cannot.
Then God help me. For I am the most wretched man on earth. I shall take the first train to town tomorrow.
Oh, is there a need for you to go so early?
Yes, Mother. Yes, there is.
I see. Very well. Oh, Ludovic, I have received a letter from Mrs. Grantly.
Yes?
And she has agreed that Griselda will stay with me when I'm at Bruton Street.
Ah, how nice.
We'll see something of you there, I trust, my dear. It wouldn't do for Griselda to be dull now, would it?
Of course it wouldn't.
You know, she's a very beautiful young girl.
She's not exactly plain, it's true.
She is very beautiful, I assure you. And there are many men who find her so, Ludovic. Many men.
No doubt there are. But I still don't think she'll set the Thames on fire.
I should hope not, Ludovic. If Griselda was the sort of girl who sets the Thames on fire, I should not wish to have her in my house. I don't like such girls. Nor, I'm certain, do you.
This is a surprise, Sowerby.
Yes, your dear wife thought so too. A fine lady, but not, I think, my greatest admirer. You've been telling her dreadful things about those bills, I suppose.
I've told her nothing about them.
Quite right. No reason to bother her. No reason, indeed, to bother yourself. Oh, thank you, by the way, for signing that second bill. You'll find it will remove all difficulties.
Yes, Sowerby, until 3 months have passed and the bill falls due.
Oh, by that time, dear Mark, I shall have made my grand alliance with the wealthy Miss Dunstable. And you, perhaps, will no longer be merely the vicar of Framley.
I don't understand.
Well, you've heard, no doubt, of the sad death of Dr. Burslem, the Barchester prebendary.
Yes.
You must all die someday. No doubt you have advised your parishioners as much several times over. Mark, the office is worth £600 a year, and there's a house in Barchester to go with it. And, of course, very few duties. Someone must succeed poor Dr. Burslem, and it seems to me, Mark, that you might do so as well as any other.
Well, Mr. Robarts, I congratulate you.
Oh, it's a little too early for that. I've not been made prebendary yet, you know. But I am advised...
By Mr. Sowerby, you mean?
Yes, by Mr. Sowerby. I am advised that since Mr. Sowerby's brother-in-law is now in the government...
Ah, yes. Mr. Harold Smith has become Lord Petty Bag, I believe.
He has. With Mr. Smith in the government, as I say, I should have some prospect of success.
Well, then, I must congratulate you also in your powerful new patron.
I trust you share my view, Lady Lufton, that the benefice is one which I can hold without any detriment to my work here at Framley.
I hope it is, at least.
But you do not think I should refuse it?
Well, Mr. Robarts, at such short notice, I am hardly prepared to advise you. But you seem anyway to have made up your mind, so I don't suppose I need give the matter much consideration. I wish you joy and good fortune, Mr. Robarts.
My dear wife has no more enthusiasm for Sowerby's plan than Lady Lufton. She has said little about it directly, but that of itself is a sign of her lack of approval. She fears a Greek from Chaldecott's bearing gifts, that's clear. But it would be folly to refuse the offer. Here is something paid back in return for those days spent among the Chaldecott set. Here is the value, surely, of knowing men of influence and power. I am to go up to town tomorrow to see how Sowerby has moved things on.
Oh, men in office never make distinct promises. They won't even admit the likelihood of night following day. But listen, Mark, even if Harold Smith should let us down, the matter has been opened with the Duke of Omnium.
The Duke?
Yes, my dear fellow. He's indicated that he'll happily put in a word on our behalf.
I see.
It's not his way, you know. Not at all. Wouldn't have said he'd do it if he didn't like you. So you see, it was as well you made his acquaintance, was it not? Your visit to Gatherum Castle is already reaping dividends, I think.
I'm very grateful to the Duke. And, of course, to you, sir.
No need. Oh, before I forget, there's another little favour I can confer. That horse of mine you rode last month.
Yes, I'm afraid I'm not interested. I did tell you.
He's yours for £130. Hark, it's dirt cheap for a hunter of that class.
No, Sowerby.
And you wouldn't have to find any cash.
Oh, would I not?
No. We deduct the 130 from the amount that's on those wretched bills you've signed. So, you pay no cash and you get a fine horse. What could be more convenient?
So you return to Framley tomorrow morning?
Yes, Lufton. I was with Sowerby today. There's a chance of my becoming the prebendary of Barchester.
Yes, I heard. It was about Sowerby that I wished to talk to you, and about a certain money dealer whom Sowerby employs, a fellow by the name of Tozer. You know of him, of course. Well, Serby's spoken of him a few times, but I've never met the fellow.
I have. Yesterday. He forced his way into my rooms when I was dressing for dinner. Told me that if I didn't find £800, and quickly, he'd start proceedings.
But surely, Lufton, all that business of yours with Serby is settled.
I thought it was. Settled at great cost. Sooner than have a fuss, I paid through the nose. Or at least Mother did. But now, it seems, having succeeded with me once, Serby's greedy enough to try his luck again. He's claiming that I have failed to honour a bill, when in fact it was honoured long ago. I tell you, Robarts, he won't succeed. If he goes on this way, I'll expose the whole affair, my entire financial involvement with Serby, and it can go before a jury. I won't allow Serby to squeeze me like an orange. And you can advise him as much when you next see him.
Lufton, I hope you don't think that I am a party to what has been going on.
Well, my recent dealings with the man have been through you, have they not?
Yes, but my intention was to oblige you both. This is unreasonable, you know. This is unjust. I acted as ambassador between the two of you, at your own particular request. And in return, I am accused of assisting in a swindle.
I bring no accusation against you, Robarts. But I know that you have your own undertaking with Serby. You told me so yourself.
Yes, to accommodate him, I did put my name to a bill.
Only to one?
Well, no.
Two bills you have signed, totaling £900, I believe. All of which, Robarts, you will have to make good.
Perhaps.
And the world will tell you, of course, that this £900 is the fee that you have had to pay.
Fee?
Yes, Robarts. To enable you to become prebendary of Barchester.
Ah, Mr. Prebendary. I thought you'd left for home.
That was my intention, but I wanted to speak to you again. You see, I have decided that I shall not be Mr. Prebendary. I have had second thoughts.
But, my dear Robarts, the thing's all settled. Settled quite definitely. I heard this morning.
Well, if an offer is made to me, Serby, I must decline it.
Why?
Because if I accept, it will seem as if I have purchased the position.
Purchased it? How?
By giving you financial assistance. Those two bills of yours.
Oh, Robarts!
I couldn't bear it, Serby, if the appointment was met with gossip and suspicion.
It won't.
But if word gets out concerning the bills...
My dear Robarts, my dear Prebendary, you have not purchased your new office. And no one can conceivably claim that you have. Let me confide in you. My brother-in-law, Lord Petty Bag, though he may be, has had little, well, nothing indeed, to do with the appointment. It transpires that it was the Duke of Omnium alone who recommended you to the Prime Minister.
Was it? In truth?
It was. I heard it from Fothergill, the Duke's agent. Robarts, if you continue, under these circumstances, to talk of giving up your new position, then I shall believe you to be insane. Until such time, I shall be pleased to regard you as the worthy prebendary of Barchester.
Ludovic, it's so lovely to see you.
Are you enjoying London, Mother?
Oh, I find it hard to do that. But it is expected of me, I'm afraid, to spend the season here.
What has become of Miss Griselda Grantly this evening?
Nothing has become of her, Ludovic. She frequently retires at this hour. Unless we are out visiting, of course.
Ah, talking of which, Mrs. Harold Smith is holding her party tomorrow. Have you been invited?
Griselda and I have indeed been invited. I imagine it will be a very large and a very extravagant affair.
I certainly hope so.
Quite extravagant enough to take care of 3 months' salary for the new Lord Petty Bag.
Are you and Miss Grantly going?
We are not.
Oh.
That is, it was not our intention to go. As you are aware, I do not have much time for Mr. Sowerby's sister. But if you are intending to be there, Ludovic...
Oh, I'll be there.
Then perhaps we shall change our minds.
Miss Grantly.
Yes?
Lord Dumbello. We met at my mother's. Lady Hartletop.
Yes.
Fine weather.
Cold.
Bitterly so. But you are well, I hope?
I think I'm well.
Oh, excellent, excellent. I'm well too. Uncommonly well. Perhaps we should dance.
Yes. Perhaps.
But I'm just as happy not to. Whichever you prefer. Yes, it's been deuced cold today.
And are you keeping well, Miss Dunstable?
I am always well, Mrs. Smith. It is my doctor who is prone to sickness.
Oh, now, when was the last time we met? We were at Gatherum Castle, I believe, and before then at Chaldicott's, my brother's place.
Oh, yes! Forgive me. Oh, society seems to demand one a very nomadic life, I find. One goes so much from house to house, it is not easy to remember which house is which. But I do remember, Mrs. Smith, that at Chaldicott's, you were not Mrs. Smith at all, but Lady Papua of New Guinea.
Yes, indeed. Dreadful lecture my husband gave.
I gather he is in the government now.
He is, Miss Dunstable, which seems to have cured him of his South Sea obsession.
Oh.
He has been made Lord Pettibag, you know.
Lord Pettibag! Oh, splendid! And so you must be Lady Pettibag, must you not?
Yes.
Lady Papua. Lady Pettibag. Oh, heaven knows what title you'll have next. I do find politics somewhat confusing, though, don't you? When we were at Chaldicott's, was it Gatherum Castle? You confided in me that your husband and others were plotting the Premier's downfall.
Ah.
The entire ministry, I believe, was soon to be dumped.
Yes, Miss Dunstable, there were thoughts, it's true, which moved in that direction. And perhaps, you see, the Prime Minister had caught wind of the disquiet, had decided at last to show some wisdom, seek new strength, infuse fresh blood into the ailing body of his government.
Yes, yes, of course. And all through a single appointment. Oh, how long will it be, do you think, before we notice the full effect of your husband's promotion?
Lord Dumbello and I were going to dance.
Yes, Miss Grantly.
But then we didn't.
Oh, well. Even being about to dance is an achievement for Lord Dumbello, I suppose. Do you like London?
Yes, I do.
Ah. I'm afraid you must have found things extremely tedious when you were with us at Framley.
No, no.
It was a great bore, I tell you, when you went away. There wasn't a soul around worth speaking to, not a soul. I was all for hanging myself in the park next morning. But then it rained.
You had your mother to talk to?
Yes, indeed. Dear mother.
And there was also Miss Robarts.
Oh, yes. Lucy Robarts.
You admire Miss Robarts, do you not?
Well, I like her. She's clever, I think. But I saw next to nothing of her after you left.
You've enjoyed yourself, I hope.
Oh, yes, Lady Lufton.
You bestowed a good many smiles upon my son during the evening.
Well, I danced with him 2 or 3 times.
You couldn't have danced with him too often for my liking, Griselda. It's very pleasant to see Ludovic dancing with my friends. Lord Dumbello, I think, didn't dance with you at all.
No.
I must tell you, my dear, he admires you very much. Ludovic, that is.
Oh, no. I'm sure he doesn't.
Well, I think you'll find that I am right. My dear, perhaps a mother is not the most impartial judge of her own son, but in my view, Ludovic is a young man of an excellent disposition. And if there should be anything between you and him...
There isn't, Lady Lufton.
But if there ever should be, my dear, I, for my part, would do nothing to oppose it.
Here he is. A fine beast, don't you think?
Oh, yes, he looks so. You have 2 horses already, don't you?
Yes, Lucy, yes I do, but I shan't be keeping him in all likelihood.
You bought him simply to sell him again?
Yes. Sirby didn't need him, and the price was good. I don't think we shall come out the poorer for it, Fanny. Perhaps until I do sell him, I shall ride him to Barchester when I begin my new duties.
Ah, and how often will you be required there?
Once a week at the most, I think.
Being a prebendary doesn't seem very hard work.
No.
But it is a most dignified position, is it not?
Oh, yes, Lucy. And by canon law, the prebendary's wife and sister are most dignified, too.
Will you have a hat with curly bits at the side and strings to hold them up?
I'm not certain. I shall have to consult the dean on that particular point.
You don't want to look like a common parson.
We wouldn't wish you to be confused with Mr. Crawley of Hogglestock.
Well, I don't think there's any danger of that.
Talking of Mr. Crawley and Hogglestock, Lucy and I are taking the pony carriage over there this morning.
Oh, yes?
The baby has croup, poor dear, so we thought we would go and see how she is and how Mrs. Crawley's getting on.
And we shall take some things to give them, shall we not, Fanny?
We shall certainly take them, but if Mr. Crawley is there, we shall have a hard time handing them over.
Oh.
You should be warned, Lucy. The curate of Hogglestock is a strict, stern, not to say unpleasant man.
Mark!
And though he has 3 children and no money, he is not one to accept charity.
I was going to ask you, Mark, if you would like to come with us.
No, thank you, my dear. I wish you both good luck.
You know, I have a suspicion that Lord Lufton will marry Miss Grantley.
Yes. Well, perhaps he will.
His mother would be happy with the match, I'm quite certain.
I dare say she might. Miss Grantley will have a large fortune, I believe.
But Lucy,
yes?
You needn't use the whip. Puck was going very nicely.
Oh, I beg Puck's pardon. When one is trusted with a whip, you see, one feels such a compulsion to use it.
It's, not just her fortune. Griselda is the sort of girl that Lady Lufton approves of. Quiet, I mean, and dignified. Not in need of much excitement, as well as being very beautiful, of course.
Beautiful?
Oh, yes, quite decidedly.
Well, she may be, and she may not. The question, I suppose, is whether Lord Lufton likes her.
I think he does, in a sort of way. Admittedly, I'm not sure he talks to her as much as he used to talk to you.
Oh, but that wasn't my fault. I'd have kept clear if I'd known he was poison. His mother didn't have him properly labelled. It's true, of course, that I ought never to have got to know Lord Lufton. It's very improper for a girl of my lowly position and very dangerous, as you've advised me. But since I do know him a little, I have to say that I would be surprised if he really wanted such a vapid thing to be his wife.
Lucy!
No! No, you raise the subject, Fanny, and I won't lie to you about it. I like Lord Lufton. I like him very much. And I dislike Miss Grantley. Dislike her very much. That's not the pony's fault. Oh, poor Puck. I won't whip him any more. I promise.
Come now, Mr. Crawley. Our guests must have chairs.
Yes, my dear, of course. Well, Mrs. Robarts, if you would sit here.
Thank you, Mr. Crawley.
And, Miss Robarts?
I shall sit here, if I may move these books.
Oh, Mr. Crawley?
Oh, no, no, I can manage. Are these your books, Paul?
Some of them.
Selected passages from Greek and Latin authors.
That one's mine.
Well, so you're a scholar, Grace.
I don't know if I am or not. I'm learning about consecutive clauses at the moment.
Consecutive clauses? Oh, goodness.
It's all that I can give my children, you see. The little scholarship that's come my way. What have you got there, Bob?
Gingerbread nuts, Father.
Miss Robarts, we are very much obliged to you, but our children are not used to such things.
Oh, I'm afraid I'm a lady with a weak mind, Mr. Crawley, and I always carry a few titbits with me when I go to visit children. So you must be indulgent and allow your little boy to accept the gift.
Very well, then. Bob, my child, give the bag to your mother.
Yes, Father.
Thank you, Bob.
And she will put the bag by?
Yes, yes, I will put the bag by.
And you and Grace shall each have one of these...
gingerbread nuts.
From time to time.
Oh, dear. One small bag of gingerbread nuts creates such a difficulty, and Lucy still has a pot of guava jelly and a box of bonbons concealed in her muff. And how are we to dispose of the oranges and the chicken broth and the fresh pork and the eggs which are still in the pony carriage?
Well, Mrs. Robarts, Miss Robarts, you must forgive me. It's time I was seeing to my parish.
Yes, yes, of course. And you must excuse me also. For a short while, little Jane here must be changed, I think. You'll take your hat with you, Josiah, won't you?
Now then, Bob, Grace, yes. Do you like sugar plums?
Oh, yes.
Very much.
That is, I'm sure we'll find that we do.
Well, let us see. For I think I have a little box of them.
Oh,
he's coming back.
Oh, heavens.
I'm sorry, I've left my prayer book behind somewhere.
It's by the fireplace, Father.
So it is. Thank you.
I'll watch by the window and make sure he goes this time.
That is a very wise precaution, Bonnie.
Well, he stopped to look at the pony carriage.
Oh, dear.
But now, he's moved off again. And now, he's gone!
With some alacrity, the illicit goods are put on display.
Roll up, roll up, come and buy.
And Lucy sells her wares for kisses, and in quick time, too. And even the contentious gingerbread nuts are brought out of hiding and compelled into this commercial scheme. And I go out to the pony carriage and start to bring in the various items and are met by Mrs. Crawley by the door.
Oh, Mrs. Robarts, you're very generous. Indeed you are.
I hope you don't mind. But
mind? I'm past minding, Mrs. Robarts. For the children's sake, I have no shame about receiving gifts.
Will your husband be angry?
Oh, I'll manage him. His lot is very hard to bear, Mrs. Robarts, very hard. One must remember that.
You must forgive me for coming to you at this time of sorrow.
Oh, 3 weeks. I was a cabinet minister's wife for just 3 weeks.
Yes, it's very unfortunate. But I don't see how there can be much cause for complaint. Harold knew there was a move to get rid of the ministry. Indeed, until 3 weeks ago, he was one of the chief conspirators.
Oh, such misery, such degradation. How could the government be voted against when poor Harold had only just joined it? Oh, it's not right, Nathaniel, it's not right. It's very doubtful, you know, whether the Queen will have a proper government at all.
Oh, she'll find a government from somewhere, I'm sure. Harriet, if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to talk about this marriage business.
Marriage business?
My marriage. The idea first came from you.
Yes. Yes, it did.
And you did much to encourage me. Miss Dunstable, you said, will someday marry someone. So why should it not be Nathaniel Sowerby, and sooner rather than later?
Well, yes, dear brother, why not?
Harriet, if I am to marry Miss Dunstable, it must, in truth, be very soon. I missed my chance at Gatherum Castle because she left of a sudden. But now, I think, I must not delay any longer.
Then go to her. I won't pretend that it will be easy, though. And I would not advise that you kneel down at her feet and swear that you love her.
Oh, if I propose to her at all, I shall certainly do it without kneeling.
And without swearing that you love her.
Are you sure?
Nathaniel, I have got to know Miss Dunstable tolerably well over the past months. Better, I'm sure, than you know her. And I assure you, the only way you can be successful with her is to tell her the truth.
The truth, sister?
You must tell her that you are a gentleman of good blood and high station, but someone who is sadly out at elbows.
Oh, she knows that already.
Of course she does, but you must tell her it nonetheless. You must tell her also that you intend to remedy your situation by the simple expedient of marrying her.
I don't think I can tell her that.
Well, you will have no other chance of success, not with Miss Dunstable.
Listen, Harriet, I've a favour to ask.
Miss Dunstable.
Yes, Mrs. Smith?
Miss Dunstable, I have come to propose to you.
Oh.
On my brother's behalf, I mean.
Ah, I see. Oh. Very well.
I hope you're not offended.
Laws, no. Nothing of that kind offends me now.
I suppose you're used to it.
I should say I am, Mrs. Smith, though generally I admit it is a fellow who makes the offer. By the by, I'm so sorry I cannot call you Lady Pettibag any more. It seems to me that you were Lady Pettibag for less time than you were Lady Papua of New Guinea.
Yes. Anyway, regarding
marriage,
I'll try to be brief and straightforward, too.
I'd be so grateful. One must avoid tedium.
And one must avoid pretense and falsehood, too. You shall have the simple, plain truth and nothing but the truth.
So help me God. Yes, indeed. Magna est veritas, Mrs. Smith.
I'm sorry?
The Bishop of Barchester taught me that at Aldecott's. Was it at Gatherum Castle?
Miss Dunstable.
He taught me some more as well, but unfortunately I've forgotten it.
Miss Dunstable?
Mrs. Smith.
My brother Nathaniel, as I'm sure you are aware, is not a very rich man.
As far as I am aware, he is a very poor man.
Though he does have a beautiful old property of his own, a property which has been in the family since long before the Norman Conquest, and which it would be very sad were it to go to ruin.
Well, my property is not that old. Ointment Hall is a relatively new edifice, no older certainly than the commercial success of Ointment of Lebanon. But I should not be pleased for all that to see it decline.
Oh, heaven forbid that it should do so.
Amen. I take it that if you brought your brother and me together, if I became Mrs. Sowerby of Chaldicott and was no longer Miss Dunstable of Ointment Hall, you would think it would be a very good thing.
Oh, yes, undoubtedly.
For whom?
Well,
remember the bishop now and his nice little bit of Latin.
For Nathaniel, then. There. Is that truthful enough for you?
I think it is, so far. But did Mr. Sowerby have no other message to send? Did he have no word to say about love or anything of that sort?
Miss Dunstable, I believe my brother has as sincere a regard for you as any man of his age ever has.
Or is likely to have for any woman of my age. Yes, well, we are being truthful.
But heavens, what would you have me say? If I told you he was dying of love for you, then you'd say I was trying to cheat you.
Yes, of course I would. After all, it would be quite monstrous on my part to expect a man to love me, would it not?
Miss Dunstable,
so I ought really to feel obliged to your brother for sparing me the usual compliments. Or rather, I should feel obliged to you, since Mr. Sowerby's time is so occupied, it seems, that he cannot attend to this small matter himself.
Upon my word, Miss Dunstable, you would test the patience of a saint.
Well, Mrs. Smith, I know precious few saints, I'm afraid. And I don't think I'm likely to add another to my acquaintance by marrying your brother.
He would do his very best to make you happy.
Perhaps he would. But I am very happy as I am. That is not to say, though, that I am at all averse to marrying. I'd marry tomorrow if I met a man I fancied, and if he didn't fancy money.
There are no such men, Miss Dunstable.
Well, then, I shan't marry.
So? What am I to tell my brother?
What are you to tell him? The truth, Mrs. Smith. And nothing but the truth.
My dear Fothergill. And how is business with the Duke of Omnium?
Oh, there's plenty of it, I find. And with the Duke, you know, it always has to be done at once.
And what does he want from me?
Well, Mr. Sowerby, I'm afraid he wants his money back.
Ah, now that's something that can't be done at once, as he's perfectly aware.
He wants it, nonetheless.
And he's getting it, but not at once. I pay him the interest regularly enough, do I not?
Pretty regularly, but sadly that's not the point. Mr. Sowerby, you know the Duke as well as I do. He has given you time to find what you owe him, and since you have failed to find it, well, he'll have to take your property.
£180,000? I was never going to find that in a hurry.
There were some thoughts of an advantageous marriage?
No, it's all off.
Then you give the Duke no choice.
You mean I'm to be dispossessed?
Yes, if you choose to call it, sir.
I am to lose Chaldicott's?
You lost Chaldicott's when you mortgaged it.
I must say, Fothergill, your master is treating me uncommonly ill.
I don't see how. Thanks to him, you have your seat in Parliament. You...
Oh, I'm to pay him for that, am I?
You were given a large loan at a very reasonable rate.
Well, I thought it was reasonable, but I was paying him nonetheless. I tell you, I've been ill you.
I think not. For a great many years, you know, you've been eating your cake, and now, Mr. Sowerby, the cake is all gone.
What right have you to complain about that?
And tell me, Mary, is young Frank Gresham well?
Oh, he is very well.
I think marriage suits the two of you.
It suits us perfectly, Miss Dunstable. Indeed it does. And I'm aware for that reason how much we are indebted to you.
Oh, I was never a matchmaker, my dear.
No, but you gave Frank courage, did you not? When so many obstacles were being put in our way, you urged him to be true to his love.
Well, if one cannot be true to one's love, what can one be true to?
Have you ever thought of getting married, Miss Dunstable?
Not a lot, Mary. I find that others tend to do such thinking for me.
Oh, before I forget, I saw my uncle last week. He sends his regards to you.
Dear Dr. Thorne, such a kind, wise man.
Yes. I wonder that he has never thought of marrying.
Dr. Thorne, marry? Oh, I don't know. Too wise, perhaps, for that.
You are not well, dearest Lucy.
Oh, I have a headache, that's all.
But you had a headache yesterday and the day before. You never used to have these headaches.
No, it's because I'm growing stupid. Very stupid. Oh, dear, what an idiot I am. I think I should go back home. Back to Exeter.
But this is your home now, surely.
Oh, Fanny, don't pretend to be hurt, for you know that I love you. And you know, too, that I'd be so very happy to live in a parsonage for the rest of my life. If it were not for one thing.
Lucy.
And that one thing, of course, you also know.
Yes, I think I do.
Oh, you've known it for a while. Ever since that day we went to Hogglestock, and I took my feelings out on the poor pony.
Oh, my dearest.
Was I not right about putting labels on bottles of poison? Was I not? Oh, Fanny, I was so proud of my own strength. So determined not to be silly and sentimental. But a few soft words, and I was bowled over.
Perhaps he should not have spoken those soft words.
But they were not false words. They were words of kindness. We had met him in the lane, do you remember? And you went on to Framley Court, and he walked back with me to the parsonage, and spoke about Papa. Just a few sweet, kind words. Of course, there is nothing wonderful about Lord Lufton. He is no hero. Perhaps it was his title that killed me. I've never spoken to a lord before.
Lucy, I don't know what to say. I can't tell whether you're joking or serious.
Well, I'm afraid I'm not very good at being either. And that's a fault of mine. Oh, Fanny, what a fool I've been. What a fool.
Dearest Lucy, it will all come right. Things always do when no one has acted wrongly.
Oh, but I have acted wrongly.
I don't see how. You didn't betray yourself to him.
No, no. I accomplished the pretense and the hypocrisy pretty well, I believe. I'll join a convent and starve myself and flog myself. And that way I'll get back my own mind, my own soul, my heart. Mind, soul, heart. I have lost them all. But why? Why? Was it his title, do you suppose? Or was it his legs?
Lucy!
Oh, perhaps you think I'm not in love at all.
I think you are. But it surprises me that you are, for I thought you would have been too prudent, too much...
On my guard, yes.
...to allow yourself to care for him.
Oh, but Fanny, it was not I who asked to go over to Framley Court. I never asked to become acquainted with Lady Lufton and her son. She invited me, dragged me out... And no sooner had she done that than she gave orders for me to be on my guard. Why is she to have it all her own way? Why am I to be sacrificed for her?
Uncle.
Yes, Mary?
What do you think of Miss Dunstable?
What do I think of her? Well, I would imagine I think the same of Miss Dunstable as you do.
Well, then, I think that she is honest.
Oh, yeah. Very honest, I should say.
Clever?
Certainly.
Affectionate, too.
Probably. Towards some folk, at least.
Womanly in her feelings.
Yes. Yes. No doubt. Mary, why are you so keen to dissect Miss Dunstable's character?
Well, Uncle, I believe that she is very fond of you.
Fond of me?
Well, it is possible to be fond of you, you know, despite your best efforts. And Miss Dunstable is so fond of you, Uncle, that although she has said nothing to me directly, I am of the opinion that it would make her happy if you and she were to get married.
Oh, Mary.
I am quite in earnest.
Perhaps you are. But you may also be mistaken. Utterly mistaken. Me get married to Miss Dunstable?
Yes, Uncle.
Good Lord. I think I should like another cup of tea, my dear, if there is one.
One thing, at least, I did wrong, and it was this. I told Lord Lufton a lie. But strangely enough, it is the one and only thing that I do not regret.
If it was indeed a lie that you told him, Lucy, I cannot believe that you do not regret it.
Oh, you must believe me. Were Lord Lufton here and speaking to me as he did, I would repeat the falsehood.
But why should you lie to him? You told me there was nothing between you but ordinary conversation, kind words about your father.
Ah, that was at first. After that day, he said much more.
What did he say?
Lucy?
I want to tell you. And I will, if I can be sure that I trust you.
I shall tell no one.
Not even Mark.
Not even Mark.
Well, then. Lord Lufton asked me to be his wife.
Lucy!
It's not credible, is it? Such a thing can't have happened. Not to me, at least.
Oh, Lucy!
But I don't think it was a dream. Here, standing here on this very spot, this flower pattern here on the carpet, he begged me to be his wife. I wonder if you and Mark might let me cut this bit of carpet out and keep it.
What answer did you give him?
I told him that I did not love him. That was my lie.
And why did you tell him that? Was it because of Lady Lufton?
In part, perhaps. But I might have dared to incur her wrath if I thought that marrying her son was right and good, that he would not have repented his impulsiveness. But he would have repented it. I know that. So do not think me conceited about my conquest. He would have repented before he had reached the garden gate. Was I wrong, Fanny? Ought I to have told him the truth? And what must I do now?
Do?
Oh, yes, something must be done. If I were a man, I'd go to Switzerland, I suppose. Or as far as Hungary, if the case was very bad.
Lucy!
What is it that lovesick girls do these days? They don't still die of it, do they? What must I do? If I pray to God to give me help and guidance, how do I word my prayer? I do not know what wrong I have committed. I cannot see that the fault was mine, except that I knew no better, was a poor, simple fool. Oh, but something must be done. It must, and quickly too. For the pain, I think, is too great to be endured.
I am so glad you could come, Dr. Thorne.
The way my niece presented it, if I did not come, I would be regarded forevermore as an ungrateful savage. So this is a conversazione.
This is my conversazione, Doctor. Mrs. Proudie held one a few months ago, which was a very pure affair. No chairs. Very little eating or drinking. She doesn't care for such things, apparently. Doesn't care for plates either. You know, it's very hard keeping up conversation. I mean, conversazione. While juggling with a cup of tea and a slice of crumbly cake.
My dear Miss Dunstable.
Mrs. Smith.
I wondered before I got here whether Mrs. Proudie would be accusing you of plagiarism. But I see you have avoided any danger of that.
Well, it would be very stupid, I think, if all conversaziones were alike. Mine is the naughty sort. Mrs. Smith, this is Dr. Thorne.
Pleased to meet you.
Dr. Thorne is the uncle of Mary Thorne. Mary Gresham, as she now is, who married young Frank Gresham of Greshamsbury.
Indeed.
The two of us became very good friends at their wedding. Did we not, Dr. Thorne?
Yes, we did.
And I am hoping that we are good friends still.
This is not a conversazione. It is not. How can Miss Dunstable possibly say that it is?
Why, I don't know, my dear. It is certainly not at all like your conversazione.
When I undertook the trouble of introducing conversaziones into society, I had no idea that the notion would be so dreadfully misinterpreted. Conversaziones, Bishop, will come to mean nothing if we allow Miss Dunstable to get away with this.
I think you're right, my dear.
Dancing, for instance, is all very well in its proper place.
Certainly.
But when Miss Dunstable invites her guests to assemble for a higher purpose, and then arranges an evening of frivolity and self-indulgence, and she is no better than a hypocrite.
A hypocrite, yes.
A spade should be called a spade.
A spade, decidedly.
She has a fine enough house, though. Five large reception rooms. These are the sort of rooms, I think, that should be provided by the nation for the use of its bishops. Don't you think?
Ludovic, how nice to see you. Have you been here long?
Arrived just this instant, Mother. Good evening, Miss Grantly.
Good evening, Lord Lufton.
Well now, Ludovic, this is not a Mrs. Proudie conversazione, you know. So are you going to ask Griselda to dance?
But I'm not sure Mrs. Proudie isn't on the right lines. Perhaps the whole evening should be devoted to elevated discussion. What's your view, Miss Grantly?
I haven't given the question any thought, Lord Lufton.
Nor should you, my dear. Ludovic is being frivolous, I fear, and...
Good evening, good evening.
Oh, Lord Dumbello.
Yes, that's right. Miss Grantly, may I have the next dance?
Yes, Lord Dumbello. Yes, you may. Excuse me.
Fine weather.
Cold?
Oh, yes, bitterly so.
You do not like Griselda, do you?
No, Mother, I'm sorry. You'd be glad if I did. You'd be glad if I'd married her.
Yes.
But I'm afraid, Mother, that she would not have made me happy.
Well, your happiness, Ludovic, is my only desire.
Thank you, Mother. You've been so good to me. I'd do anything to please you. Apart from marrying Miss Grantly. And to tell the truth, I'm not sure she'd have me if I asked. She's ambitious, is Miss Grantly. Has her sights set high.
My dear Ludovic, she could not have done better than by marrying you. You will get married someday, won't you?
Oh, yes, Mother. When I've found the right girl.
Dr. Thorne.
Miss Dunstable.
Oh, you know I'd give anything for a glass of beer.
Ah.
But I suppose that's out of the question. Dr. Thorne, you are in precisely the same spot as when I left you an hour ago.
Am I?
Yes, indeed. On your own, too, and not looking at all comfortable.
Oh, I'm perfectly comfortable, thank you. Well, as much so as I expected to be.
You think I shouldn't have held this party, don't you? You think I've wasted my effort?
No, not at all. Some people will have derived pleasure from it.
But in your estimation, Doctor, it is all vanity and foolishness. Oh, dear. I think I meant to do good, though.
Of course you did. And you must not suppose that I am condemning you, Miss Dunstable.
Ah, but I do suppose it. You are condemning me, Dr. Thorne, and I condemn myself frequently. You know, since I have become rich, I have found that my better qualities, such as they are somehow wasted on the kind of people I tend to meet. Cleverness and scorn, irreverence and sarcasm, these all seem to serve me better. And my wealth, which I previously affected to despise, is corrupting me, debasing me. I fear, Dr. Thorne, that I am fast losing my capacity for goodness.
Morning, Lufton. I heard you were back.
Yes, just for a few days, though. I'm off to Norway next week.
Norway?
Salmon fishing. The season's early this year, apparently. But I thought I'd spend a few days here first, see how the horses are.
The horses, I'm sure, are fine.
Yes, I'm sure they are. There is also another matter which has brought me to Framley. A very important matter, in fact.
Oh, yes. It's not money, I hope.
No, it's not money. Mark, has your sister spoken to you about me recently?
My sister? No. Well, nothing in particular, at least.
She's not told you, for instance, that I have made an offer of marriage to her.
What? Marriage to Lucy?
Yes.
No, of course not. She's told no one, I'm certain. And if people are claiming that Lucy has even hinted at such a thing, then I can assure you, Lufton, they're lying.
But, Mark, I did propose to Lucy.
I don't believe you.
I proposed to her. In as plain language as a gentleman could use.
And what was her answer?
She refused me. But I have come down to Framley to repeat my offer. Nothing, I admit, could have been more definite than your sister's answer. It struck me as being almost discourteously so. But it's possible that circumstances weighed with her that ought not to have weighed with her. Therefore, Mark, I mean to try my luck again.
Lady Lufton, I have some news to give you.
Yes, and I think I know what it might be. Your husband is to become a bishop.
Ah, well, that is not my news. Not at present, at least.
Oh, so what news are you giving me? Not bad news, I hope, Mrs. Grantly.
Well, I won't call it bad, though you may regard it as such. It is concerning Griselda. She ought, perhaps, to have spoken to you herself, but she was timid about doing so. Oh, Lady Lufton, it was my dearest wish to see her married to your son. You know that. The match would have satisfied my hopes for her entirely.
Yes, indeed. I'm sure it would. To tell the truth, though, it had become clear to me some time ago that your hopes and mine were not to be gratified. Well, whatever may now be your dear daughter's fortune in life, I sincerely hope that she will be happy.
Oh, I think she will be very happy. My news, Lady Lufton, is that Lord Dumbello proposed to Griselda the other night at Miss Dunstable's party.
Did he? And?
His lordship's offer was accepted.
Lucy, Lord Lufton is here.
Here? Now, at the parsonage?
No, Lucy, I mean he's at Framley Court.
But he's promised to call after breakfast tomorrow.
Very well, if he wishes.
Lucy, my dear, he's coming especially to see you.
Oh, that makes a difference. I'm afraid in that case I shall be engaged.
Lucy, he has told me everything. And he requested to visit here tomorrow so that he might receive an answer from you.
What answer?
My dearest, that is for you to decide.
But what is it he wants? He came to me once before, and I gave him an answer then.
And is that answer to be final?
Lord Lufton, at least, does not consider it to be so, and therefore he means to ask you a second time.
And Lady Lufton?
She knows nothing yet.
Lucy, dear, your own heart must make the choice.
Turn the matter over. After you have said your prayers tonight, ask yourself what answer you should give. And, Lucy, you must know that I have perfect confidence in your judgment, and I will stand by you, as will Fanny, of course, in whatever decision you make.
Well, I have already made a decision. I do not wish Lord Lufton to come here tomorrow.
But, Lucy...
It would do no good. It would only cause me pain. And he wouldn't wish that, I know. Mark, I do love Lord Lufton. I had no intention to, but I do love him. Almost as dearly, I suppose, as Fanny loves you. And you may tell him so. Indeed, you must tell him, or he will never understand me. And you must also tell him that I will never marry him. Not, that is, unless his mother asks me.
Unless she asks you? She will not do that, I fear.
No. If I thought that she would be happy for me to be her daughter-in-law, I would not have made such a stipulation. I think rather that she would regard me as quite unfit to be Lord Lufton's wife. She would hate me and despise me. And then he would begin to despise me too. And that I couldn't bear.
Unless my mother asks her. But that is nonsense. It's not the way of the world. You told Lucy as much, I hope.
The situation is she couldn't endure it if she thought Lady Lufton regarded her with disfavour. Even if your mother felt no personal animosity towards Lucy, she might not believe you were making the best of marriages.
I don't see why. But anyway, Mark, it's all absurd, this talk about my mother. A fellow these days doesn't marry as his mother bids him. Do you think Lucy loves me?
Well, I can't say whether she does or doesn't.
Why can't you say?
She won't accept you, Lufton. That is her message. She will only accept you if Lady...
Yes, 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 yes. So, I am not to talk to her then. Hmm? I'm not to ask her myself if she will be my wife.
I'm sorry, Lufton. I truly am.
Mama says that you are not to be the Bishop of Westminster after all, Papa, and that we are not to move to London.
Your mother is correct, my dear.
But why, Papa? You were spending such a good deal of time with the new Prime Minister, were you not, Papa? It seemed so certain.
Yes, Griselda, yes, it did. But you see, I could not be bishop until the Act of Parliament was passed, and the Act of Parliament has not been passed.
Why has it not been passed, Papa?
Because the members of the previous ministry, although they themselves first put up the bill, have now decided they oppose it.
Oh.
Just as indeed the present ministry opposed it before, I mean, they became the present ministry.
Oh. That is all very strange, Papa.
Very strange. And very distressing. Parliament has become a laughingstock, and the work of the church has been impeded. Shameful. Shameful!
Well, Mark, I won't beat about the bush. I'm here concerning those bills.
I suspected as much.
I've had a word with Tozer. The money dealer, you know?
Yes, Sowerby, I do know.
He intends to demand the full £900. Straight away.
What?
I fear so. I thought it best to tell you, Mark, in order that we can see what can be done.
Well, Sowerby, I can do nothing. So Tozer, for his part, must take what action he deems fit.
But, Mark, my dear fellow...
Mr. Sowerby, I have been a fool, and worse than a fool. I did think, I admit, that your standing in the world would give me a little protection.
Well, Mark, so did I.
But I find instead that you have robbed me, cheated me, plotted my ruin without a thought for my wife or children.
Mark, you must calm yourself. We need to find a solution to this difficulty, attempt to reach some kind of settlement.
No, Mr. Sowerby, I at least shall make no such attempt.
Then you will be ruined. The bailiffs will be at your door. Your reputation will be irreparably damaged.
Well, so be it.
Mark, listen.
Call me by my surname, if you please. Let us have no affectation of friendship.
It is no affectation, I assure you. You are not yet ruined. I am. I have lost my fortune. I am about to lose my estate. If Parliament is dissolved, as seems inevitable, I shall, in all likelihood, lose my seat in the House. But none of this, believe me, oppresses me as much as the misery I have brought upon you. I wish to help you, save you. That's why I asked that we might talk today.
Yes? And how am I to be saved? By my accepting another brace of bills, I suppose?
Just one bill, signed conjointly with me.
Mr. Sowerby, no power on earth will persuade me to sign another bill. I was very weak before, but I have sufficient strength left to refuse your offer.
Well, if you won't sign a bill, you could obtain a loan from your bank.
I could, perhaps, but I won't try. I obtained a loan only recently, you know. Borrowed £130 in order to buy that horse of yours. And very weak and foolish I was in that matter, too. You told me, Mr. Sowerby, that the price would be deducted from the total amount of those two bills. I wouldn't have to pay a penny in cash. That's what you said. Do you not remember?
Yes, Robarts, I remember. And I swear that at the time, I did not intend to ask you for the money for the horse.
Did you not?
No. In truth. But I suddenly found that I was in need of it. Your friend, Lord Lufton, got into a rage about a bill that was outstanding. For £800 it was. And I saw that if I didn't pay that bill myself, he'd make a noise about things, your bills included. Which would have proved very harmful to you, I think. Would have spoilt your chances of becoming prebendary at Barchester.
Yes, no doubt. Well, it's clear to me now that if I'd had any self-esteem, I would never have assumed that particular office. I would have rejected your generous gift.
My dear fellow,
if I'd had any self-esteem, if indeed I'd had good sense, I would have severed all connections with you long ago. The cost of my acquaintance with you is very dear, is it not? When I am to lose everything I have.
I must tell her. I cannot, must not, let the story stay untold until a bailiff arrives at the door and our furniture is sold from under us or I am led off to the county jail. I must tell Fanny everything. Must do so today. Now. If I wait another hour, I think my courage will fail me.
You frighten me, Mark. Why do you look so grave, so anxious?
My dearest, I have been very foolish. I have committed a terrible wrong and have brought great sorrow and misfortune upon us.
Oh, Mark, no. Don't turn away from me. Tell me, Mark. Tell me what this misfortune is, that we may share it.
I will tell you. But I don't imagine what you will think of me when I do.
I will think that you are my own husband. My own dear husband. That's what I will think. Whatever it is, you may tell me, and if indeed you have acted wrongly...
Oh, yes, indeed I have.
Then it is my duty and my privilege to forgive you.
Dearest Ludovic, Miss Robarts is not fit to be your wife.
Not fit? She is of the same class as Griselda Grantly.
No, no. You are quite mistaken.
The one is a clergyman's sister, the other a clergyman's daughter.
But, my dearest, the Grantlys move in an entirely different sphere of life, as you are perfectly aware.
Well, whatever sphere Miss Robarts moves in, I wish her to be my wife. And I want to ask, as a favour, that you will take to her, like her, if you do not do so already, that is.
Oh, Ludovic. Ludovic.
Mother, my mind is made up. I intend to marry her.
I think you will be throwing yourself away if you do.
Yes, Mother. But the reason you think so is because you do not know Miss Robarts well enough.
Oh, yes.
Mother, when I return from Norway, I shall come straight home and I shall see which way the land lies. You are going down to Framley today, are you?
I leave this morning.
Well, when you are there, Mother, I would ask that you treat Lucy as if I were engaged to her.
But, Ludovic...
Though I am not engaged quite yet, I have made my offer to her, and it has not been rejected. So, please, be kind to her. Be good to her. For I intend to make her my wife.
£900. That is a large sum.
And then there is the 130 which I borrowed to pay for the horse, and the interest on that, and other smaller debts. The whole amount will not be far short of £1,300. £1,300. And what have I won in return?
Mark. Dearest Mark. I'm so glad you told me.
I should have told you sooner.
Perhaps. But you have told me now, and now I hope I'll be able to ease your worries by sharing them.
Oh, Fanny, I'll never put my name to another bill, believe me. Never. For no one.
Thank you, my dearest. Why, Lucy, you've heard, have you?
Heard what?
About Mrs. Crawley. She has typhus. Typhus? Oh, no, Mark. I shall go over and see her at once.
Well, that you won't. If it is typhus, we should not want the children to run any risk of contagion when you return.
Indeed not. Which rules you out also, dear brother. And anyway, men are almost worse than useless on such occasions.
Oh.
So I shall go. And when I return, I'll keep well clear of the bairns, I promise. Now, do I have leave to take some provisions?
She's very ill.
Yes, I was told as much, which is why I'm here.
God has stricken us heavily, Miss Robarts. Very heavily. But I've prayed to him, was on my knees for the best part of last night. That is my only hope, that he hears my prayers and answers them. But God's will be done.
Yes, and it may be his will, Mr. Crawley, that I should give some assistance myself.
What kind of assistance?
Well, one thing, I think, would be to arrange for the children to be moved from here.
Moved?
Yes. Till your wife is feeling well enough to look after them again.
But where would they go?
Oh, I'm not sure yet. To the parsonage at Framley, perhaps. Though I would need to talk it over with Mrs. Robarts first. And, of course, another thing I must do is spend some time with your wife.
You can't do that, Miss Robarts. Not while she has the fever.
It is because she has the fever, Mr. Crawley, that I want to see her. Just for a short while on this visit. But when I return, this evening most likely, I shall be coming to stay.
Stay? For how long?
Until Mrs. Crawley is better, of course. But, Lucy, I'm not at all sure that you should stay there.
Oh, yes, I must. I promised I would. And there is no one else to look after her. Apart from her husband, I mean. And there's not much he can do except pray to God.
Well, before anything else, my dear, I have a letter that's been brought for you from Lady Lufton.
From Lady Lufton?
Yes. The servant asked for an immediate reply, but I explained that you'd be gone for a few hours. Won't you open it?
Yes, of course. It is not a very long letter, so it cannot be a catalogue of my vices. She wants to see me. I am to step over to Framley Court, she says, as soon as is convenient. Oh, dear. I'm in for it now. Oh, well. Wish me luck.
I think I understand from what my son has told me that there is no actual engagement between you and him.
None whatsoever, Lady Lufton.
And may I assume that there is nothing going on between you, that it is now all over?
Well, Lady Lufton, that depends entirely on you.
On me?
Yes. May I ask what your son has told you about this matter?
He has told me that he made you an offer of marriage, something which, as his mother, I regard very seriously. And so I thought I had better see you and appeal to your good sense and judgment, and to your high feeling. You are aware, of course, that a man of Lord Lufton's rank and position in the world...
Lady Lufton, forgive me. Did your son tell you what my answer was to the offer that he made?
You refused him. And I must express to you, Miss Robarts, my admiration and my gratitude.
Lady Lufton, forgive me again. I did refuse him. And I believe now that I should not have done so. In part, I think I refused him because I feared your displeasure. But I do love him. I loved him from the first, though I did not mean to do so. Was foolish enough to think that I could know him and not love him.
Miss Robarts, I could see what was happening, I assure you.
Oh, everybody could.
And I took what I thought were the appropriate steps.
Yes, Lady Lufton, you did. It was already too late, though. I loved him then and love him now. Dearly and with all my heart.
Shall I get the baby ready then, Miss Robarts?
Yes, please, Grace. And tell your brother what the plan is, if you would, so that he can be ready too.
Yes, Miss Robarts.
Good evening.
Good evening to you both.
Miss Robarts, I have not said you can take the children away, you know.
Oh, I shall not take them away. Mark will do that. For I am staying, as I told you, Mr. Crawley. It is all arranged. Indeed it is.
Perhaps it is arranged, Miss Robarts, but it was never agreed. I should have been consulted before a proceeding such as this.
I think it might be for the best, Crawley.
The children will be quite comfortable at Framley Parsonage.
I do not doubt that at all. But too much of such comforts will unfit them when they come back home.
Mr. Crawley, allow us to give you some small assistance.
I look to assistance from God, Mr. Robarts, not from man.
But for your wife's sake.
For the children's sake. Please.
Nathaniel, where are you?
I'm here, sister.
Oh, good Lord. What are you doing?
Sitting. Looking out of the garden. Thinking. The lawns need trimming. Look, the flowers are fading. There are weeds pushing up through the gravel path. And see there, one of the dryads has fallen from her pedestal. All in decline and decay. But while it was still mine, Harriet, there was still hope that I could rescue the place, preserve it. Pass Chaldicotts on to the next generation, as it has been passed on from father to son for centuries past. And who is it to go to now? To the Duke of Omnium. Omnium! The Sowerbys lived here before that name was ever heard in England.
Come, Matt. Oh, it's very cold.
No money, no home. soon, no seat in Parliament. Some young patrician will get that, I suppose. Some creature of the Duke's. Of course, I've always lived with debts and difficulties for as long as I can recall. But I always taught myself that I could endure them. Now, though, it's all gone too far. The game's up, Harriet.
No, the game is not up. Listen, what if someone were to pay all that you owe the Duke? If someone were to advance the money on the security of Chaldicotts, just as the Duke did?
Well, I don't think there's much chance of that. Who am I going to find with that kind of money?
Well...
And why would he want to use it in such a way?
She, not he. I'm thinking of Miss Dunstable.
Well then, Grace, if you will carry the clothes,
yes?
I shall carry the baby.
Yes, Miss Robart.
Ah, Bob, where's your father, Bob?
He's still talking with Mother.
Good. Then let us go, and swiftly.
Lucy, wait a moment.
Up you jump, Bobby.
Yes, Miss Robart. And you, Grace.
Mr. Crawley has still not given his permission.
He has not absolutely refused it.
He has done as much as, surely.
Now then, look here.
I think we're too late.
No, Mark, you must go. No.
This isn't right, you know.
Lucy.
Oh, please, you must.
Very well. Come on, Robart.
Goodbye, children. Be good.
Stop.
Goodbye.
Stop. Stop.
Goodbye, goodbye, goodbye.
Another cup of tea, Uncle.
Thank you.
Uncle?
Yes, Mary?
You remember that conversation we had the last time you came to Boxall Hill?
Well, no doubt we did converse. We often do when you invite me to tea.
Yes, Uncle. And on this occasion we conversed particularly about Miss Dunstable and about marriage.
Ah, yes. I do remember that.
Have you thought about it at all since then?
Thought about it? Oh, indeed. An idea such as that, Mary, once it has been put into a man's head, is almost bound, I think, to be thought about.
I believe you would have a good chance of success if you were to ask her.
Oh, Mary.
I do, truly.
Yes, no doubt. You do, my dear, but you should not be trying to tempt an old man into an act of folly. It is wrong of you. It is.
I don't see that at all. Why should it be wrong of me to want to make you happy?
But I am happy already.
Well, then, why should not you and Miss Dunstable both be happy? Together.
Oh. Mrs. Crawley is making good progress, I hear.
Yes.
And Miss Robarts is still with her, is she?
She is, and Mrs. Crawley's children are with us.
Did Mr. Crawley not make any difficulties about the children?
I gather he did. But on Lucy's instructions, Mark kidnapped them.
Dear me! When that Miss Lucy of yours takes a thing into her head, she doesn't like to give it up, does she?
No, she is a very determined young lady. But determined as she is also self-denying. I mean, in particular, with regard to the matter between herself and your son. She is not to blame in any of that.
I have never said that she is.
She should be praised, not blamed. For she saw how it would bring dissension between you and your son if she accepted his offer, and so she sacrificed herself. And for that, Lady Lufton, you owe her a deep debt of gratitude.
Oh, my dear Fanny, you're a second Don Quixote, I do declare, dashing in with lance and shield when there's no enemy in sight. The simple truth is, there has been imprudence, as you are well aware.
Imprudence? Lady Lufton, she did not seek him out. They met. They fell in love. These things happen.
But it is not necessary for every young gentleman and every young lady to fall in love directly they meet. It would be very inconvenient if they did.
Of course it would, but such is not the case. Lord Lufton and Miss Grantley, for example, did not fall in love, though you meant them to do so. Your son did, however, fall in love with Lucy. And he told her of his love. He begged her to accept his hand. And she refused the offer, though she loved him deeply. Refused him not as some girls do, with mock reserve and with no intention of being taken at their word, but firmly, steadily, and by denying her love for him. What more could she have done on your behalf? When he tried to make his offer a second time, she refused to see him, sent him a message instead that she would never accept him unless she did so at your request.
It was a very proper message.
Well, perhaps. Though I tell you, Lady Lufton, I would not have blamed her if she had accepted him.
I see. So you regret her decision?
I regret anything that may stand in the way of her happiness.
And you have no regard, therefore, for my own happiness.
Lady Lufton.
In the past, you know, I could always count on you for love and sympathy. But now, when this great weight is upon me, when your sister-in-law obliges me to make a decision, I find that you are no longer my friend.
But if you would only give your approval.
No, Fanny. Please understand, I cannot approve of her marrying Ludovic. I simply cannot do it.
Greshamsbury, June the 18th. My dear Miss Dunstable, I think it right to confess that a fear of being considered false and mercenary would, in other circumstances, have kept me from writing this letter to you. But, a third party has led me to believe that the proposition I am about to make would be regarded by you with favour. And so, Miss Dunstable, I have felt sufficiently emboldened to give it a try. We have not known each other long, but we do, I fancy, know each other quite well. And I have gained the impression that you are almost as pleased to be with me as I am to be with you. And, therefore, if you can suppose that a union between us might increase the happiness on each side, then I will be bold enough to plight my troth. When I remind myself of my age, I cannot help thinking that I'm an old fool. But I try to reconcile myself to that by remembering that you yourself are no longer a girl. Your affectionate friend, Thomas Thorne.
Mary Gresham, you are a traitor. A traitor, I tell you.
Why, whatever is the matter?
This. It is from your uncle. Read. But the first four lines only.
Oh.
No. It is not a love letter, as you suppose.
I think it right to confess.
It is not a love letter at all. He tells me I'm an old woman and insinuates that I'm an old fool, too.
Miss Dunstable, I'm sure he doesn't do either. But a third party has led me to believe...
Yes! And who was that third party?
Well, it was me, of course.
Aha! You confess it.
We have not known each other long.
No, that is enough. And what did you tell him, Mrs. Gresham? What did you advise him? Now, come on out with it.
I told him you would have him if he offered.
You told him that? As a fact?
I told him it was what I thought.
Well. Then I suppose I am bound to have him.
The likelihood is, my dear, that the bailiffs will come tomorrow.
Tomorrow? What will you do?
Nothing. What can I do? They must come. I'm so very sorry.
Lord Lufton is due back today. Why don't you talk to him?
What? Ask him for money? No, I'll not do that. I want no dealings with Lufton.
Why? Because of Lucy?
Well, it might be awkward, might it not? But also, Fanny, he had his difficulties with Sowerby too, you know, and he thinks I was the cause of them. There would be sharp things between us on that account, if no other. One thing I must do, is resign as prebendary of Barchester.
Oh, but why? Will not people think it very odd?
People will think much worse of my conduct than that.
But you have done nothing that is unjust or dishonorable.
At the very least, Fanny, I have touched pitch and become defiled. I will resign. The gift was Sabi's, and I should never have accepted it. Oh, how that man has made me suffer. I can only hope and pray that he may suffer for it in return, in the next world, if not in this.
Dearest, no. No, do not wish him evil. You must not. He has his own sorrows. You can be sure of that.
You see, Nathaniel, I have something to tell you which is worth celebrating. Your very good health.
Thank you. Well?
Well, Nat, Miss Dunstable has pondered over our suggestion.
Your suggestion.
And she has finally agreed to it.
Has she now?
She's got all the details worked out. And the upshot is that Chaldicotts will become hers, just as it was previously the Duke's. But that you will continue to live there. And if the place is well managed, as yeah. Miss Dunstable will no doubt ensure that it is, there is no reason why Chaldicotts cannot remain your home for the rest of your life.
I must, I think, go along with this plan.
You must indeed. But there's more to it yet. She wants to help you in the election. Financially, I mean. It's not pure altruism on her part.
Harriet, I didn't suppose it could be.
She's keen to set herself up in opposition to the Duke, as both a landowner and a political patron.
I understand. So, Nathaniel Sowerby has escaped from the Duke's captivity into Miss Dunstable's.
Oh, Nat.
I am grateful to her. In truth, I am. After the disaster of my offer of marriage...
My offer of marriage?
I don't think I could have expected very much from Miss Dunstable. I'm grateful to you, too, of course. But I fear Miss Dunstable's assistance can't rescue me now. Too late for that. I tell you, Harriet, my spirit's well nigh broken. Life, for me, is turning very sad.
But that is appalling, Mother. A scandal.
I understand it was of her own doing, Ludovic.
Oh, I'm sure it was. But there is no need, surely, for her to be sacrificed in this manner. Are there no nurses that can be hired? Mother, she is not ill, is she? She has not caught the fever herself.
I have no idea.
Oh, I insist upon knowing. I shall go to Hogglestock first thing tomorrow.
Very well.
And when I see Lucy, what am I to say to her? Assuming, that is, that she's not been taken ill. What am I to say to her as coming from you?
Ludovic, I have explained it all to Miss Robarts and to her sister-in-law.
Explained what?
I have told them that I do not think that marriage would bring happiness either to you or to Miss Robarts.
But why have you said this? Why do you think you have the right to decide for me in such a matter? Mother, you must unsay what you have said. You must! What objection do you have to her? What impediment is there? Is it that she has no money?
No, Ludovic. That is not the reason.
Then what is it? Tell me!
Well, if I were forced to put my objection into a single word, I should say that she was...
Yes?
Oh, Ludovic. All I want is for you to be happy.
What is that single word, Mother?
She is... insignificant. She is a very good girl, Ludovic.
Insignificant?
But she is not qualified to fill the high position to which you would exalt her.
She is not insignificant. She is not.
Ludovic, I think perhaps you do not quite understand me.
I know what insignificant means. And I know what you mean, too. You'd have me marry some terrifying Amazon. Some pink and white giantess of fashion who likes to frighten lesser folk into their proprieties. Oh. Mother... there is no son in England who is more devoted or dutiful than I, but there are some things which a dutiful son cannot endure. I have chosen Lucy, and no one has the right to stand between us. Oh, Mother, I confess it would pain me if you did not love her, but whether you can love her or not, please, Mother,
Go to her. Go and hold out your hand to her. And ask her to be my wife.
I was so very proud. As much so, in my own way, as Mr. Crawley of Hogglestock. I had assumed a standing, held my head high, spent time among great people. But where is my pride now? And what will the Arabins and the Grantleys and the Proudies say when they learn that the bailiffs have visited Framley Parsonage? What will Josiah Crawley say? He is a man who is half-starved, whose children are dressed in rags, whose wife, when she is not ill, is nothing but a drudge. But has he ever had the bailiffs visit him?
Mark, the men are here. They're in the dining room.
Yes, I know.
Perhaps you should go and see them, my dear.
What is the use? I shall see them soon enough.
Cook says they're very civil for their line of life and will stay so, she thinks, if they're given some meat for their midday meal and a glass of beer.
Oh, let them eat while the food lasts. I don't suppose the butcher will be sending us any more.
Mark, we owe the butcher nothing.
Not at present, perhaps, but you'll see.
My dearest, you mustn't speak that way. No, Mark, don't turn from me. Who is to comfort us if we cannot comfort each other?
Comfort? How can you think of giving me comfort? I am amazed that you can endure to be in the same room as me. Look around you, Fanny. Look at these things of ours. Things we bought when money was plentiful, or which were given to us by Lady Lufton. Things which are dear to us. And now they are to be scrutinized and catalogued and given a price.
My dearest.
And in short time, they will be taken away.
Come in.
Morning.
Lufton.
I'm sorry to arrive unannounced, but the house is in a state of some confusion.
Yes.
How do you do, Mrs. Robarts? This is all a terrible bore, isn't it? Our gardener gave me the news and I came straight over.
It's not Mark's fault, Lord Lufton.
I'm sure it's not.
Mr. Sowerby has betrayed him.
Believe me, Mrs. Robarts, Mr. Sowerby has betrayed everyone who has ever trusted him. I told you as much a while ago, Mark, did I not?
Yes, Lufton, you did.
But why on earth have you let it go so far? There's no need for the bailiffs, is there?
Mark wouldn't sign any more bills. He was quite determined.
And you were quite right too, Mark. But you could have come to me, surely. Or my mother. Oh, anyway. We'll talk later. Those men I saw on my way in with the big boots and the pens and inkhorns. I must have a word with them before they do any damage.
Archdeacon.
Yes, Susan?
I have just come from speaking with my sister.
Ah, how is Eleanor?
She says she has received a visit from Mrs. Proudie.
Well, many of us must be visited by Mrs. Proudie sometime in our lives.
She says that Mrs. Proudie is spreading a rumour.
Nothing new in that. What is the rumour, my dear?
It concerns Griselda, Archdeacon, and Lord Dumbello.
What?
The rumour has it, Archdeacon, that he has jilted her.
Jilted her? Good heavens!
It is not a rumour, Dr. Grantley. Lord Dumbello has fled the country. He started 4 days ago by way of Boulogne and is now in hiding somewhere on the continent.
Never mind where he has gone to. The story is that he has broken off his engagement to my daughter, and I am asking that this should be denied.
Well, then, you will have to go round to every house in Barchester, for the story, as you put it, has been widely told.
Yes, and at whose instigation, I wonder? My lord.
Dr. Grantley.
The bishop is entirely ignorant of the affair.
Oh, that is quite correct. Entirely ignorant.
You are one of the few, then? How strange, when your own wife has been such an energetic messenger. Dr. Proudie, I must tell you that your wife distinctly mentioned the matter to my sister-in-law, Mrs. Arabin.
But of course! Why should I not distinctly mention it? There are some things which can't be kept under a bushel, Dr. Grantley. And this appears to be one of them.
There are no grounds for the rumour. No grounds at all. And therefore, my lord...
The bishop, as I said, has no knowledge of any of this.
But I do very much hope that it will all be resolved satisfactorily.
Dr. Grantly, I understand your feelings. Mm. Considering your daughter's position, the match was a very good one, as regards earthly wealth, I mean. And I therefore do not wonder that you should be grieved at its being broken off.
Mrs. Proudie.
But worldly disappointments can become precious balms, as you perhaps have discovered, Archdeacon, during your career. And I'm sure you will learn how to live with this sorrow.
Now, Mr. Robarts, Ludovic has urged me, for he has a kind heart, a very kind heart, not to be too severe with you. So, all I will say on the matter is this. I hope you and Ludovic have had enough to do with black sheep to last you your respective lifetimes.
I have been very foolish, Lady Lufton. Very foolish and very wicked.
Very foolish, yes. As has Ludovic. And since it was he, so he tells me, who first introduced you to Mr. Sowerby, and thereby helped to get you into your troubles, I am pleased to hear that he is getting you out of them.
He has been extremely kind, and I told him so 100 times. To be free of the bailiffs is a great relief. But it's understood between your son and me that I intend to hand him back every penny he pays on my behalf.
I'm sure you do. And now I think we should say no more about this wretched business, either now or at any time. Let it never be mentioned again.
Oh, God bless you, Lady Lufton. Fanny and I could never have such a friend as you are.
Thank you. And you know, Mr. Robarts, I would like to be a friend to your sister, too.
I'm sure I shall be able to get about tomorrow, Lucy, dear. And then I need not keep you from your home.
Oh, Mrs. Crawley, you are in a great hurry to get rid of me. I suppose your husband has been complaining again about the cream in his teeth. Oh,
you don't know how he speaks of you when your back is turned.
Well, when my back wasn't turned, he told me I was a weaver of falsehood. Oh. That was with regard to the arrival of the mutton broth, I believe.
And he told me that if you were to write an epic poem about womanhood, he would make you the heroine.
Ah, yes, with a cream jug in my hand.
He says you are an angel, Lucy. And so you have been, a ministering angel and a friend. I'm almost glad that I have been ill, seeing that I have made such a friend on account of it. Now, who is this?
It must be Fanny, with some more mutton broth.
No, my dear, that's not the pony cart. I'd recognize the sound of that by now.
Well, let us see. Oh, good heavens. It's Lady Lufton's carriage.
Oh.
And Lady Lufton is inside it.
Miss Robarts, do take a seat.
Thank you.
My dear, you will, I think, recall our last conversation.
I do recall it, Lady Lufton.
Well, my dear, what I said to you then, I said because I thought it was for the best. You, of all people, will not be angry with me for loving my own son better than I love anyone else.
Oh, no. No, indeed.
He is the best of sons. The very best. And I am certain that he will be the best of husbands, too. It was my fond hope once to choose a bride for him. But he has made his own choice. He has chosen someone whose qualities, I confess, I was, in my foolishness, not quick to recognize. But who I now see possesses a strong spirit, a quickness of mind, and a wonderful capacity for selflessness. For these qualities, and many others, my son loves her, and is right to do so. Which is why I am here, Lucy. I have come to ask you to be his wife. Lucy, my dear, must I go back to him and tell him that there is some objection, some hindrance, other than that stern old mother
who thought her only son too precious to be parted with.
Oh, no. There is no hindrance.
What shall I tell him, then? Shall I say simply, yes?
Yes, Lady Lufton. Dear Lady Lufton. Simply, yes. How strange it was the following day when I left the parsonage at Hogglestock and was driven to Framley Court and led into the drawing room there. How strange to think that not so many months before I had sat in the corner of that room, sore at heart, because I felt I was no fit companion to those around me.
But things have come to a different pass now. Lady Lufton, of whom Lucy was so much in awe, loves her and cares for her beyond measure. Her son has chosen Lucy, and Lucy is the apple of his eye.
They were married in October, and a splendid affair it was. But before then, there were two other marriages of note. First, that of Lord Dumbello to Miss Griselda Grantly. Rumour has it that there was a marked degree of uncertainty about his marriage prior to the appointed day. But rumour also has it that such uncertainty was thoroughly extinguished after Archdeacon Grantly met with his lordship on foreign soil and had a very serious and useful word with him. As for the second marriage, that was between Dr. Thomas Thorne of Greshamsbury and Miss Martha Dunstable.
Do you remember at my conversazione, I told you I was losing my capacity for goodness?
Oh, yes, I do remember.
Well, I have every hope of getting it back.
Have you? Oh, I'm very pleased. May I ask by what means?
By being married, of course. To you.
Oh, I see.
You're going to make a decent woman of me. And not before time.
By the way, despite Miss Dunstable's best efforts, I should say Mrs. Thorne's best efforts, Nathaniel Sowerby lost the seat for West Barsetshire. To Lord Dumbello, in fact. And that, I think, has quite knocked the stuffing out of Mr. Sowerby. He still lives at Chaldecott's, of course. But there is no Chaldecott set to gather in that ancient house. No clever talk or mocking laughter. Those days are gone for him and for me. And I, at least, do not regret their passing.